call the Arizona Dental Board meeting to order. And Ms. Bates, if we can have a roll call, please.
Yes, Pardee.
Here.
Taylor.
Here.
Beanstalk.
Here.
Berg.
Here.
Harmon.
Here.
Hero.
Here.
McLean. McLean. Morrow.
Here.
Seaman.
Here.
I will note that Ms. McLean was present. I don't know if she got kicked off, but if she did, I'm sure she will be joining us again, so we will have to watch for her. And now,
can you hear me now?
Oh, there we
go. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay. That kicked me off for some reason.
Okay. So again, to note for the record that Ms. McLean is here. So before we move on, I'm going to refer to Ryan to go over some of our online etiquette that we are going to be using for this meeting since it's remote.
Okay. So this is Ryan Edmondson, Director of the Dental Board. Nice to see everybody from the board, and thank you for the guests that are present. Quickly, just to kind of cover a couple of preliminary things so that everybody's under the same knowledge. So this is a board meeting, and it's constructed as such so that we continue to stay professional throughout the whole meeting. There's a ton of concern out there with this virus. Can we go back to work? Can we not go back to work? Stuff like that. Because it's a board meeting and they have things agendized correctly on the agenda to discuss certain things, it's up to the board to discuss these. They can take input if asked. So if somebody asks and the board grants the input, they'll listen to the input. But for the most part, it is a board meeting. Feel free to listen in. If you're going to speak, this goes for the board members too. The ones that dial in, I think you hit *6 if you get muted. But if you're not speaking, even if you're a board member, go ahead and mute yourself and just be cognizant then to unmute yourself, because there's tons of other feedback that comes from all of our rooms that we're all in. It looks like 75 of us are on the phone call or video conference right now. So it just makes it difficult to do that. What we have a monitor on during the meeting right now that's monitoring all of the conversation. We're recording it. What happens is if we get somebody that's a distraction, a continual distraction, we'll mute you a couple times. Ultimately, if it's a continued distraction, it's easy to see who is the distraction, even if it's just a phone call. We will boot you from the meeting. So that's not something we want to do, but it is something that we may have to do based on distraction. So we have an agenda, and we hope to get through that. I think I've covered everything. Oh, lastly, and this is the reminder that Heather gave last time, if you're speaking, please, even if you're a board member, please state who you are by last name, if appropriate, or first or last name if you feel compelled. And that's it. Did I miss anything, Heather, that you'd like me to cover?
I do not think so. I think you covered everything.
All right. Sounds good.
Thank you. We're going to go to agenda item number 2, declaration of conflicts of interest. This would be the time for any board member to announce if they are going to be recusing or if they have any other conflict of interest to put on the record.
This is Dr. Taylor. I'm recusing myself on item 4, A1.
Thank you. We're going to now skip around. I'm going to skip around the agenda a little bit to try to get some of the license holders completed before we go into our longer discussion items in case they want to leave the meeting. So we are going to start with agenda item number 4A1. This is review of requests for extension and or online continuing education course. Case number 20160123 and 20170164, Dr. Michael Margolis. And again, this is the case that Dr. Taylor just recused himself from. So does anybody have any discussion or want to make a motion?
This is Harmon. I think this is a generality which is going to probably continue through a couple of these agenda items. Obviously, with the lack of access to hands-on continuing education and everything else right now that have been in board orders, I don't think it's, you know, anything but prudent to extend any kind of deadlines for continuing education requirements for previous things. The question is how long. So, again, without knowing our current situation, how long it's going to be until not only, you know, dental clinics can open back up, but then, you know, teaching places with hands-on, those kind of requirements we have. I don't know if we should go 6 months, if we should go a year, but I think we should discuss what possibilities y'all are thinking.
This is Morrow. Dr. Harmon, do you have a motion?
Well, I thought we'd have some discussion on time frames. I mean, are there any thoughts on, I mean, that, happy to make a motion, but I thought it would be good to get a little quick discussion about what thoughts are on time frames. Is 6 months appropriate? Is a year appropriate? It's just hard because we don't know. So if we have
members of the board,
do they get another, you know, can they request another extension? I guess that's my question there.
And Dr.
Board members, this?
Heather, I think attorney for Margolis is on.
Yes, thank you.
I apologize. This is David Williams. I don't know if I think I unmuted myself. I'm assuming people can hear me.
Yes, we can.
Okay. I apologize for interrupting. With respect to Dr. Margolis, the specific request that we asked for an extension was with respect to the auditing compliance provisions of his current board order, his probation order. Right now he's required to do quarterly. He's supposed to submit quarterly monitoring. He's supposed to submit records quarterly to affiliated monitors for a quarterly records audit. His first quarter of 2020, those records are now due to affiliated monitors because his practice has been shut down in compliance with the COVID-19 restrictions. We were requesting, initially we requested a 90-day extension on to submit the records. So what would it ultimately end up happening is the next review would be from April. So the current review period is January 1 through March 31 is quarter number one. Quarter number two would be April 1 through the end of June. We would ask at the very least for a 90-day extension to submit the next round of review records. However, because Dr. Margolis' practice has been shut down for almost a month and a half, for almost a month, there's going to be a drop off in the number of records that are part of the sample. So I would actually amend my initial request, not just to have like a 90-day, I would actually suggest almost a 180-day, basically a 6-month forbearance to submit the reports so literally the next review period would almost be a 9-month review period. It's a longer review period. So your next quarter, I guess what I'm framing is the next quarterly report would not be due until the end of the third quarter, which would be the period of July, August, and September, meaning the next report would be due sometime in mid-October, I believe. So I think that gives, and the request for two purposes. One is the COVID restrictions, although we know Governor Ducey's order is allowing some dental offices to open back up, assuming they meet all of the requirements of the newest order. But there's also been cash flow issues that have created economic impacts of trying to keep not furloughing staff, things like that. So there's an economic consideration as well as a social distancing consideration, as well as having an adequate sample of patients during the time that we've been down, because some patients will probably be slow to come back out of fear of social distancing and whatnot.
This is Morrow. Would your patient be accepting a 6-month extension to the requirement as well then? If we give a 6-month forbearance now, would he be willing to extend it 6 months after he's all done?
Yeah, we'd be willing to do that because because the probation order actually allows for us to petition for early termination. So I don't have any problem extending the period of the order by another 6 months. So that wouldn't be a problem because hopefully my expectation is that after a couple more of these audits, things are in a positive trajectory, and then we would be petitioning the board for an early release from the order anyways.
All right, so this is Morrow. I make a motion that we extend Dr. Michael Margolis.
Hey, Dr. Morrow, can I interrupt real quick? This is Ryan. We may have to check with Seth on this real quick. I like the idea of extending, but I think because it's an order, you would have to probably get Dr. Margolis to, in order to extend the current order, he'd have to sign a new order. Am I correct in that, Seth? Seth?
Could we make a motion to extend an offer then to file a new consent agreement to extend it?
So, because I'm not the attorney, and this is just my history in working with boards, and this is a new phase in all of this because we're all faced with something that we've never been challenged with before. I think what we should just do is exactly what they're requesting, which is to basically take the forbearance, like skip this one. I don't think he's even seeing clients anyway to have a monitoring. And so skip the first quarter, extend the second quarter. If I can speak on Mr. Williams' behalf, I'm not sure. The second quarter reported sometime in the third quarter, is that it? And then the third quarter reporting in the fourth quarter. If the board at the end of the order, because he's likely going to ask for early termination, if at the end of the order you think it needs to be extended, this is something that would come up, but you would have to get a new order in order for it. You can't just extend it beyond the term of the order.
Got it. All right, I'll amend it. This is Morrow. I propose that we extend Dr. Michael Margolis a 3-month furlough on his continual monitoring to be possibly evaluated after 3 months if needs be. Is that reasonable?
From Williams, that's fine. Thank you very much.
Hardy seconds. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Williams.
Thank you very much. Have a good day and stay safe, everyone.
Thank you. We're going to go to agenda item number 4A2, case number 20190115, Dr. Sergio Montes. Is there any discussion, or would anybody like to make a motion?
This is Dr. Taylor. When was the order made?
I think it's in the packet.
I couldn't find it.
It looks like it's on... The order that's in there is not the signed order. It's just the order.
Right.
Miriam, we're going to have to rely on your knowledge. What's the date of the order, please?
One moment, please. I have to look for it. One moment.
Thank you, Dr. Taylor. This is Dr. Taylor. Marion's looking
at. I believe we just received that order this past week.
When was it signed? So it was signed in April then?
Yes, we just received it last week, but it's not fully executed yet. I believe we just received it in the mail.
Okay, this is Dr. Taylor. The reason why I asked is if it had been signed back in January or December, then he's already had 3 months to get something out of it. Since it was signed now, I move that we extend the board order 6 months.
Morrow seconds.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
Real quick, this is Ryan again. We're extending the board order. This is similar to the conversation I just stated with the previous one.
Is we would probably have to rewrite the board order up again to meet that so that he can do this because of the COVID-19 virus.
Yeah, because it's a let me look at the order real quick. I believe it's a consent order, so you'd have to re-offer a new order extending it beyond.
Right. So then let me amend my thing then. I move that we rewrite the order to put into 6 months, so it'd be, we could probably get it out in April or May, June, July, August, September, October, that it would be finished by October at the latest.
So if I can interject here, we're getting lots of feedback somewhere. Dr. Montes is he's not trying to extend the terms of the order. He's trying to meet the compliance terms of the order, but instead of going to the live in-person classes, he wants to go through the same people that would provide an in-person class and take their online course in lieu of the in-person because it's not available in person right now.
Yeah, this is Dr. Taylor. I read that in the letter. So then I would move, I'll re-amend it again. I move that we allow him to do the online courses for the 6 hours of CE in diagnostic treatment, 6 hours of Crown and Bridge, and 6 hours of record keeping in regards to this non-disciplinary order.
Dr. Morrow, do you amend your motion?
As long as we say that it's due to COVID-19 restrictions.
Right. Thank you.
Then yes, I second it.
So we have motion and a second amended. Any further discussion?
Yeah, this is Dr. Taylor. Miriam or Christina or Ryan, if you look up those online, see that those were acceptable. It looked like you said they were acceptable.
So this is Ryan. I was the one that spoke to Dr. Montes quite a lot. I just told him to submit the syllabuses or the course outline, and he did that in the body of the email. It looks like something that has been taken before by other people, by Spear, I believe is the name of the organization, and Paith, and he just couldn't do it he could no longer do it in person, and they're offering the same courses online, and so really that's all you're doing is approving the online versus in person.
This is Dr. Tanner. Thank you.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. We're going to go to agenda item number 4B, motion for rehearing or review. Board to discuss, take possible action on the motion for rehearing and review on the following matter. If the board grants the motion, it may conduct the rehearing or review at the meeting or schedule further proceedings at a future meeting date. Number 1, case number 20180021, Dr. Ronald Walker.
So real quick, Heather, Seth is having some difficulties again. I just want to make certain, just in case we need to hear from him, especially on this part, that he's heard. Seth, are you there?
I'm here. Can you guys hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Thank you.
Thanks, Heather.
And good morning. This is Susan McClellan. Are you able to hear me?
Yes, and see you.
Oh, very good. I'll wait. Hello.
Would you like to state anything, or would you like to hear from the board discussion first?
I just want to quickly review that for this issue, we are not challenging the findings of fact. It's basically just a correction to the conclusion of law, as I've stated there. I think there was just a clerical error. And then, as you discussed in the previous cases, the board order for the CE, we would need to have modified. There's three CE courses. One is a hands-on for Crown and Bridge, and you know, that's not able to be done right at this time. The second course is for diagnosis in root canals or endodontic focus, if that could be changed to online. And then there's a 3-hour requirement for x-ray taking, if that could also be changed to online. And then we've also asked for an extension of the time from 6 months to 12 years, just because I don't know what you're going to decide on the hands-on, and I don't know how long that would take.
This is Dr. Taylor. You said 12 years. You mean 12 months.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I think we could probably do 12 months. Sorry about that.
All right. Heather, I'd like to hear from Seth in regards to what she's talking about is the conclusion of law, that it was written wrong, and what would be said instead.
Yes, this is Seth. On that conclusion of law, and I apologize, that was my error in drafting. There was some extraneous language that applied to another case, so it would just be a matter of striking that language, and I believe it was the language is respondent's decision to perform an invasive elective procedure on a patient in a state of hypertensive crisis without a recommendation of treatment from the patient's primary physician. That should not have been there if the board were to agree to the request, which is not unreasonable. Would be to grant, you'd be looking to grant a review, and part of that review would be to strike that language, and then as far as the CE, whatever you feel is appropriate in regards to that request.
Okay. Thank you. This is Dr. Taylor.
Any other discussion? So this is Hardy. I move that we grant the review based on AAC R4-11-1701 C7 and 8.
What about this, Dr. Taylor? What about the continued education on the?
I'm gonna do first granting the review, and then I want to discuss this review today, and then we will go to the 2-part. Board order that we need to talk about.
Taylor, okay. Second.
This is Seth. You may want to grant the review both on the conclusion of law issue and on the continuing education. Then okay. You can go separately into those issues.
Thank you. So I would like to modify my motion to, as stated above, for both the conclusion of law and the continuing education issues.
This is Dr. Taylor. I second it.
So we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Can we have a roll call, please, Ms. Biggs?
Yes. Hardy?
Aye.
Taylor?
Aye.
Beanstalk?
Aye.
Berg?
Aye.
Harmon?
Aye.
Goodman? He hasn't joined. Hero?
Aye.
McLean?
Yes.
Morrow?
Yes.
And Seaman?
Yes.
Motion carries, none opposed. So this is Hardy again. I would move that we strike in the conclusions of law the paragraph that says respondent's decision to perform an invasive elective procedure on a patient in a state of hypertensive crisis without a recommendation of treatment from the patient's primary physician represented unprofessional conduct as defined in ARS
32-1202.0114. Taylor, second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? We have a roll call, please, Ms. Biggs.
Hardy?
Aye.
Taylor?
Aye.
Beanstalk?
Aye.
Berg?
Aye.
Harmon?
Aye.
Hero?
Aye.
McLean?
Yes.
Mar- Seaman?
Yes.
Motion carries, none opposed. And Seth, I have a question for you. Ms. McClellan had recommended that a paragraph be added to the conclusion of law to be rewritten. Would you recommend that being added into it? I can read it. It says, the conduct and circumstances described in the above findings of fact constitute unprofessional conduct as defined by ARS 32-1201.0114. Such conduct is grounds for discipline under ARS 32-1263A1.
Yes, this is Seth. Once you strike that language, that's essentially what it's going to read. It may need some slight modification from the current language, but that would be acceptable.
So I can make a motion as of such?
Yes.
Then I would move that we now add the language to be rewritten, and I'll state it again. The conduct and circumstances described in the above findings of fact constitute unprofessional conduct as defined by ARS 32-1201.0114. Such conduct is grounds for discipline under ARS 32-1263A1.
Morrow seconds.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? We have a roll call, please, Ms. Biggs.
Hardy?
Aye.
Taylor?
Aye.
Feenstock?
Aye.
Murd?
Aye.
Harmon?
Aye.
Hero?
Aye.
McClain?
Yes.
Morrow?
Yes.
Seaman?
Yes.
Motion carries, none opposed. Now for the second part of it, we're going to be looking at the CE, if there's any discussion on that, or does anybody have a motion?
This is Dr. Taylor. I don't know how you could do a hands-on online CE. I think we ought to, that should still be there and should be done. I'm sure things will be opened up by July and he can do that since it's going to be a 12-month order.
I agree.
I don't think that should, this is Dr. Taylor again, I don't think that should be changed. The other two could be done online, the CE credits, but the hands-on one I don't think should be changed.
You want to make a motion, Dr. Taylor?
Accept the extension of the 12 month to take into effect the CE of 6 hours for the two different ones, but for the, let me see here a second. For the hands-on, that needs to be done as required.
Morrow seconds.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
Can I just make sure I'm clear on this? So the motion is to modify the order to extend the time to complete the continuing education to 12 months. To keep the Crown and Bridge as hands-on, but allow the diagnosis and root canal and x-ray taking to be allowed to be done online?
Yes. Just Dr. Taylor.
And I think you should, again, put it in that due to COVID-19 response, I think anytime we're doing this, we've got to make sure we don't set a precedent for anything else that's coming without having that verbiage in there.
Thank you, Dr. Morrow.
Do you amend your motion for that, Dr. Taylor?
Yes, I amend that, what Seth said.
Morrow seconds.
So we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Can I have a roll call, please, Ms. Biggs?
Hardy?
Aye.
Taylor?
Aye.
Feenstock?
Aye.
Berg?
Aye.
Harmon?
Aye.
Hero?
Aye.
McLean?
Yes.
Morrow?
Yes.
Seaman?
Yes.
Motion carries, not opposed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Cullen. We're going to go to agenda item number 4C, Dr. Michael Chang. And as I'm looking, I just realized on the agenda there is no case number. Oh, because this is a licensure. Excuse me, this is a licensure. So this is an application for licensing of dentist, Dr. Michael Chang. The board to review, discuss, and take possible action.
This is Dr. Taylor. The reason why we have this up here is because of disciplinary action in Virginia. And I think Dr. Chang is here.
Yes.
Can he comment on that?
You're on mute, Dr. Chang, if you're speaking.
So this is Ryan, if I may. This was on the agenda on March 6th for the same thing. And I think it was Dr. Taylor and Mr. Goodman. I don't think Mr. Goodman's present, but both of them wanted to invite Dr. Chang to the next meeting. And we didn't want this to continue through June, so we invited him here now.
So you called earlier, and I apologize. So I'm here.
Okay, I just muted Christine. I'm not sure who that is, but she was talking. Does that make sense? What I was just saying.
Right.
So you guys wanted to interview him and ask him some questions about where he's coming from and the disciplinary action in the current. Based on the license verifications.
So this is Dr. Taylor. Just to, if you haven't already read what happened, Virginia, he was sanctioned for not complying and not responding to emails in regards to some things that happened in Virginia. He paid a $1,000 fine and took 3 hours for continuing education. But my concern is he left Virginia, and then he went to, and he's licensed now in Colorado and Utah, and there's been no discipline, but he's also been licensed in D.C., Minnesota, New Jersey, and New York. And my question to him is why so many places, and why is he bouncing around, and why does he come to Arizona?
Maryland, not Minnesota.
Yeah, Maryland, I'm sorry. I mean, that's a concern to me that, this is Dr. Taylor again, that's a concern to me in that, okay, so he's in these other states, he's licensed in Colorado and Utah, why does he want to come to Arizona if he's licensed in Colorado and Utah, why is he going to stay there?
Dr. Chang, before you address the board, you'll need to unmute your microphone, and I'm not sure if you know how to do it, but I can show you if you need help. No, so this is what, I'm going to share my screen. Okay, so my screen should be up, and then when I scroll down, this will pop up, and you have to check this box here in order to unmute yourself. So as soon as you move your mouse down, this little microphone.
Or hit Control D.
We're Control D. So the other way to do this, Dr. Chang, is hold down the control button on your keyboard. Oh, you're using a smartphone. I think you would do star 6. Christina, do you have any knowledge in how to unmute a smartphone?
No, but the only option, the only other option that I can think of is he could also just dial in directly.
Yeah, maybe do you have the dial-in instructions?
I just Googled it, Ryan. This is Hardy, and it is press star 6 to unmute their phone.
Okay.
And if that came up, touch you, live image, and the mute prompt comes up is another recommendation.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, awesome.
So the question that Dr. Taylor asked, why I apply so many states or what was the reason to apply for Arizona State Board?
But let's bring in Arizona, doctor.
Yes. The last year, I had a contact with some company, a dental practice, in the city close to the give me one second, please.
Is that Pierce? Pierce?
Yes, yes, Pierce. Here's Arizona. They are looking for a part-time dentist position that is more like fitting my future dental practice modeling, like a hard 2 days to 3 days working in the office, and then rest of the day, rest of the week is off. So I kind of interested. So I applied the Arizona Dental Board license. That's the reason.
This is Dr. Taylor, Dr. Chang. Appreciate you being on and coming appearing before us. My question is, where are you practicing right now?
I'm working at Colorado right now.
Colorado. So you're not in Utah anymore?
No.
Were you in Utah at one time?
No, I never been to Utah, but I acquired a license about just before January, I guess.
Okay. This is Dr. Taylor again. So are there any actions against you in Colorado?
No.
Okay. And when does it, and this is Dr. Taylor again, when does this business venture in Arizona take effect? As soon as you sign a contract and move down or what?
Well, at this time, there's no longer effective with that position because all the coronavirus and the situation, we closed that deal. So I'm not going in the Arizona area at this time.
So then, this is Dr. Taylor again. So do you want to withdraw your application then for Arizona?
Well, I'm not saying withdraw, but at this time, I don't have any plan go directly in recent, immediate months or so. I don't have any plan to go down there.
All have discussion on this in regards to why would we want to give him a license if he's not coming?
This is Morrow. You know, I honestly, I don't know if that is even an issue for the board in terms of, you know, a lot of people can hold different licenses in different states. And as long as they don't have any negative repercussions against their license, everything's been resolved. You can hold licenses in every state if you wanted to without any problems or even ever applying for them. So I don't know if it's a restriction that we need to put on.
This is Hardy. I don't think it's a restriction we can put on. We have the option of he would be allowed to withdraw his license like you already asked him, Dr. Taylor, or we could grant it or we could deny it. There are repercussions to denying it, and we don't have any justification based on even what Dr. Morrow just said to have a denial. There isn't a justification because he holds multiple licenses or that he isn't planning on coming to the state. That isn't a valid justification. I'm not saying that personally. You may not have your own opinions against it, but as a board in our voting.
Right. This is Dr. Taylor. Dr. Chang, with the Virginia issue, and you resolved that with $1,000 and 3 hours of continuing education, as that license, are you still holding that license in Virginia, or is it no longer being held?
On active.
Once I cleared from Virginia State Board, I moved to time frame is a little different. Okay. I moved to the Colorado, and then I received a letter from State of Virginia. I need to pay a fine, $1,000, and attending 3 hours of a continuing education course. So I did that when I was in Colorado between 2015, between 2016. Once I clear that, there's no reason to holding a Virginia license because I permanently relocated to Colorado that time due to my divorce and everything. So I don't have any holding a Virginia license at this time.
Okay, thank you. This is Dr. Taylor. This is Dr. Taylor. I move that we accept licensure Dr. Chang at this time. For Arizona.
Morrow seconds.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you for being with us, Dr. Chang.
Thank you.
Be safe, everybody.
Good luck to you.
Hold on, our motion's not done yet. Any opposed? Motion carries, none opposed.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Kay.
Goodbye.
Okay, I am going to go now to agenda item number 7B. We're going to discuss B first, COVID-19 testing and practice changes. Now I'm going to apologize for everybody that's calling into the line because we're going to be getting into some topics that are probably going to require some deeper discussion. So for those waiting for other agenda items, my apologies. Okay, COVID-19 testing and practice changes. The board to review, discuss, and take possible action regarding the board's current scope of practice and whether it allows for dentists and or dental practices to test patients for COVID-19 or any other future virus, separate and apart from volunteer work. Additionally, what changes should licensees make within their practices based on this new normal?
Do we have any, this is Morrow, do we have any legal counsel on this?
So, this is Ryan, and not legal counsel.
Or role counsel, or?
Right. So, this was originally put on the agenda because there is no real clear direction coming out of this how practitioners are supposed to practice. And how do you keep yourself safe, the staff safe, the patients safe, all the patients that come in to the office, and is it feasible to also then test somebody prior to an exam? And Sean Murphy, here's some legal counsel, although he can't give legal advice to you, but if he's on the line, this is kind of one of the, we had this on here because of that. However, because of his request, but then 2020-32, Executive Order 2020-32 came in, and it's now stating in order to work that you almost have to test. So I don't, originally would I, because you guys have a scope of practice that is defined in your statute, and I think that's why we, that's why we added the scope of practice to your packet of information so that you could read what the scope of practice actually reads. And it's vague on whether or not it allows for testing. It almost requires a legislative change to start testing. That being said, it looks as though the governor's order is basically not granting you access, but mandating that in order to treat patients, you would have to test. And so these, I think these two items under seven are kind of going to be coupled together. I can defer to Sean Murphy if he wants to say anything here.
This is Dr. Taylor first. Just for the record, I'm very, very worried about the government telling us what to do all the time. Less government, better government. And I know that Mr. Murphy has the ADA, the Arizona Dental Association, has written up a bunch of guidelines, and I'd like him to discuss those, which make it more feasible for us as dentists to practice here in the state of Arizona.
Sure. So, President Hardy, if you're all right.
I am. And one thing also to all of us on the call before you begin, Sean, is I'm not saying I disagree at all when I state this with Dr. Taylor, but I want us to remember for our discussion that whether we agree or disagree with the current executive order in place, and that's for all of them, right now, we have to abide by them. So there are lots of laws that get passed or these executive orders that we as a board, the associations, have no part of, and this is just from the government. So I'm going to limit a lot of the personal opinions that are coming out of it because that is not going to do anything for this meeting. We have to abide by this law. We don't have an option with it. So now we just need to figure it out how we can practice and move forward with it. So that being said, I'm going to refer it to you and I'm going to mute myself for my dogs.
Great. Thanks, President Hardy. So if everyone remembers, this was originally brought up by me on behalf of the Arizona Dental Association with the idea that the practice of dentistry, we believe, does allow COVID-19 testing of dental patients. We just were asking for Bodex to give some guidance on that, if there was any question. Per President Hardy's comments, I completely agree. The executive order mandates that dental professionals and other healthcare professionals do COVID-19 testing. Now, what I'll say is we don't think that that mandate is going to hold up because, as you may know, there's not enough COVID-19 tests out there to begin with, and we need to have dental providers, hygienists, dentists get back to work. So we've already reached out to the governor's office, to the Department of Health, to try to get some understanding as to whether COVID-19 testing is really even going to be required for dentists. I think the whole reason we brought it up, and regardless of what they decide, I think it would be great if the BODEX could come up with just a statement, in essence, to say under Arizona's practice, the definition of dentistry, we believe if a dentist wants to do a COVID-19 test, they are able to. That way, in the future, and regardless of Governor Ducey's mandate, should COVID-19 tests become more available, should dentists want to be able to do a COVID-19 test or other dental professionals, they will then have that option.
This is Dr. Taylor. Thank you, Sean. The issue what I'm trying to say is that we ought to test our staff to that way to ensure the public that they're protected. But Sean, what what did you get back from the governor in regards to testing if they're available? Does Patterson or Shine sell those things? I know that Dr. Morrow said something about it. He's got some testing kits.
Right, and I can't answer about the availability of the tests, except I am not aware of anyone selling the tests. And also, I think it may be kind of cost prohibitive, given at least some of the prices on the tests right now. So we are waiting to hear back from the governor. We're told Monday we're supposed to get answers to some of those questions, including whether the COVID-19 testing actually applies to dentists and dental professionals, or whether that was more so meant to only apply to hospitals. And we've raised that question with them. Again, all we're trying to do is get guidance so later down the road there isn't an argument should a dentist or hygienist want to do some form of testing. And I agree with you, Dr. Taylor. I don't want to limit this, require anything. I just want it to be understood that in the state of Arizona, if a dentist wants to do a COVID-19 test, they are able to.
Thank you.
This is Hardy. We have a couple chats that have come up. Our practice ordered IgG tests due in 1.5 weeks. Box of 20 cost $750. AC Perio purchased 250 kits. Also, I reached out to Sonoran Quest. On a side note, I do believe, even with our statutes personally, that this does fall into the scope of dental practices, that we are able to test for that, and we will get back to that in a minute. But I reached out to Sonoran Quest. They do have the nasopharyngeal swabs that the providers collect and send back to the lab. So to start with them, you would have to open up an account. They would send out supplies. You are not able to request the amount. They will send you a couple per week to get started, is what she told me. And then every account is reviewed weekly based on what you send back. If you're sending back 100% of what is sent out, they will then, on their terms, increase the supply that they sent to you. And their turnaround is a 2 to 4 day turnaround for the test results, but that can vary based on the demand that's coming in. To open up an account with them for testing and to use theirs, you would need to go online or by phone. So that is what I personally found out as well for more testing.
This is Dr. Taylor. Thank you, Ms. Hardy. Dr. Morrow, don't you say you have some test kits?
I don't have some. I just read that Shine had a 5 to 15 minute test that's coming available. I don't know if it's come available yet, but they've been working on it as far as I've heard. But
okay.
But the other issue, and I'm going to try and keep my personal opinions out of it, the other issue is if we have to test every patient before they come in, before they get dental work, if I have someone coming in for a denture adjustment and they're coming in daily, do they have to go in daily for a test when each test takes 2 to 4 days to get back? You know, we just need clarification on how to proceed with the order. And in that 2 to 4 days, they could also get COVID-19 during that process, and that makes that test null and void. Now, we're talking about IgG and other things. That's determining if you've had it already and not if you're active. So that's a separate test. If you have the IgG test and you've already been, you know, you have the antibodies, then you're good to go. But if you haven't had the antibodies and you're not sick, you could get sick in that period of time. There's just a lot of ambiguity. And the other issue is it looks like we were lumped in with medical and not dental as specific. So I'm glad we're looking into this further. At the end, would it be possible if we make a request to the governor as well about our opinion on it? And is that reasonable?
This is Hardy. Ryan and I were talking this morning about that, yes. And before we continue discussing more of that, let's go back to specifically, do we feel that COVID-19 testing is within the scope of dentistry based on our statute? So let's try to stick with that. And then what other changes, if we agree and we say that that's something that we can and move forward with, are there other changes that we would recommend in our practices based on this quote-unquote new normal before we move on? Then we will move on to the executive order.
So this is Morrow then. If I had an opinion, I believe that we have the right to test. I don't think we have the right to treat. And so if they're composite, that'd be the next step, is if we can test, then it has to be a referral out to, you know, their doctor or whatever.
This is Dr. Hero, and this is more of a question, but do we know how dental malpractice insurance companies evaluate coverage with this type of testing? And if the board says it is within the scope, does the malpractice insurance then automatically cover the...
It's 10 o'clock.
The sorry, I don't know who that was, but, you know, because you hate to have the board come out and say it's within our scope and have malpractice insurance companies disagree, and, you know, what's going to happen to the dentists that are doing these tests at that point.
Can I comment?
Oh. This is Dr. Taylor. Before you comment, Sean, I really think that the testing of this virus should be left to the medicine and not to dentists. I just feel that we're getting out of a realm of something that it's like Dr. Morrow just said, that you could test it, then 3 days later you could have it again. So like Dr. Hero said about the insurance factor, I think we ought to leave it to the medicine, the medical field, and stay within fixing people's teeth and stuff.
So, Dr. Hero, one more time. I'm sorry. I agree with Dr. Taylor, because in addition to it, my concern is who's going to pay for this? And if this may not be a board decision to be made, but it's certainly something to be aware of. If this cost is going to get passed along to the patient, and the dentists are unfamiliar with billing medical insurance, or medical insurance may not cover it since they're asymptomatic, what's going to happen to the lower socioeconomic groups that are coming in, like patients on access, that may not be able to afford the $60 to $300 test that we're performing?
This is Mauro. That's a great point. And in order to do that, we have to be Medicare providers, because Medicare will pay for it. But if you don't take Medicare, then you have to charge the patient. And so that really puts a strain on those patients. So that's a big deal. And I don't think it's up to the, if you're doing a test that costs an office money, there should be a billing code for it, and it would be a dental billing code, because we're dentists.
Yeah. There's no dental code for that. So there is a medical one, but insurance is not going to pay us.
That's true. And the second set, our question is tomorrow, is we do test for other things. You know, we do test for hypertension when we take blood pressure. We do some other things that go along with it. But we don't actually do tests like Jeff said in the chat, no TB, no flu, hepatitis, HIV, or diabetes. However, in my office, you can check and see if their diabetes is under control. But we have them do their own their own blood test. They prick their own finger. We don't do it for them.
Now, one thing also to add on to you, Dr. Morrow, this is Hardy. When I went to AADB, American Academy of Dental Board meetings, and I talked with the other dental board members of states, it is becoming more acceptable and even mandated that dental offices test for diabetes and also HIV. So that may not be something that's happening right now in our state, but it is in other states, and it's coming. So to think of a nasopharyngeal swab, that to me falls more in the scope. And I also don't think that we should make a decision whether it falls in the scope based on the financial cost to patients. We put things into place in practices that's not always covered in the beginning by insurance companies. Look at implants. A lot of insurance companies still don't cover implants, yet that completely falls in our scope of practice, and we perform them. So if it were to fall to this is something that is done, if it's mandated and patient chooses not to do it, under that mandate, if it is mandated, again, we are waiting for guidance from the governor. And on a side note, both Ryan and I have reached out multiple times, each one of us individually with phone calls and emails, and have not heard back to clarify the order. But if it's mandated, then at that point, that patient wouldn't be able to be seen while this mandate exists. If we choose, when everything goes back, if that's something that's a personal thing in each individual office, that's up to the each individual office on what you do with that and how you bill with that and whether you choose to see them. But it's not something that, as a board, I think should dictate a decision.
This is Dr. Taylor. Thank you, Ms. Hardy. Just background-wise, I think a lot of this can be taken care of by doing a temperature check, by a questionnaire. And let me give you an example. I just went in for surgery yesterday and had several biopsies done, and they didn't do a test on me. They asked me specific questions, took my temperature, took me into the room, filled out a questionnaire, so on, and then I had the surgeries done. This is not a dental thing. It's a medicine thing, and I think as a dentist, we can do the same thing as do the temperature check, do the questionnaire, and suffice it as that until we get mandated. And the governor's office hasn't mandated it. I think we ought to table this until we hear something from the governor, whether it's being mandated or not, until we make specifically some type of recommendation.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is John McDonald, representing the Dental Association. Lobbyist. May I speak for just a moment?
Yes.
Thank you. I just wanted to mention that I've been on the call for a while now just listening, and I've had a couple of conversations just this morning with legislators and also with other folks from the medical side, and I've had direct conversations with the governor's office as well. My sense, and it really is just a sense based on a lot of different conversations, it's not definitive, but my sense is that the governor's office, when it comes to both physicians and dentists, I think their goal here is to try to provide, through this EO, some clear guidelines, but also keep them as general as they can so as to not be overly restrictive. I think they are trying to avoid, in some way, trying to answer every single question and every single circumstance that may exist so as to avoid being overly restrictive. I think they're trying to give, my sense is they're trying to give physicians and dentists as much leeway as they can within a certain framework. So to the point that was just made by Dr. Taylor, I think it may be wise to let them try to answer a lot of these questions that they've received from all sides in the last 48 hours and see what they come out with, because again, I think what we're going to see is an attempt to try to have some broad parameters, but within those parameters, let medical professionals make decisions in the best interest of their patients. So I just wanted to throw that in there, that I think that's where the governor's office is attempting to go here, is to provide maximum flexibility, but also have some guidelines and safeguards in place to protect the public. So I just wanted to throw that in. Thank you.
Thank you.
And this is Sean, real quick, Sean Murphy with the Arizona Dental Association, to follow up on that. Just to make clear our position, we are not advocating that COVID-19 tests get mandated for any dental office or dentist or dental hygienist to have to perform. Right now, the executive order seems to indicate that. We've already reached out to the governor's office to get clarification because we don't think COVID-19 tests should apply in the dental setting, given the fact there's not even availability of COVID-19 tests at the present. Our whole thought in bringing this up was just, to the extent COVID-19 tests do become available, and if, only if, a dentist wanted to incorporate that into his or her practice, knowing the costs and, you know, running all the different thoughts about it through their business model, as well as for the patient and the safety of their team, then they would be able to do so without having any sort of question as, is this allowed? And I agree it would probably be if the BODEX was to issue guidance after checking with your malpractice carrier, if testing is allowed, BODEX believes that the definition of the Dental Practice Act in Arizona allows doctors to test for COVID-19, something along those lines. So that's the thought. We don't want to mandate testing. We're trying to get clarification, as John said, on the executive order. At some point, we will probably see tests be reasonably priced and available. And if that happens and dentists want to do COVID-19 testing, not to treat COVID-19, but just to see if those coming into their practice have COVID-19, we believe they should have the availability to do so under the definition of the practice of dentistry.
Yeah, this is Morrow. Sean, that's really reasonable, and that's why I was saying if we lock ourselves out by saying it's not something a dentist can do, we still may be directed and mandated that we have to do this. At that point, then we can't do it in the office. We'd have to send it to a lab. Or because sometime in the future, my guess is it's going to be done in the office. The test is going to be a pinprick, put it on a thing kind of like a pregnancy test, and it's going to positive or negative, and then you're done. But if it's not in our scope of practice, we can't do it, and we're locking ourselves out. So that's my concern. I'm not saying do it. I'm saying that we keep ourselves available to.
This is Hardy. I agree. I think if we just look at the scope of practice, I do think that it falls under it. And I wouldn't want to see anybody, just as Dr. Morrow said, locked out. Mr. Earl, are you wanting to say something? I see you're unmuted and hear a little background noise. I just want to verify before I mute you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, no, I'm just observing. Sorry.
Okay, thank you. That's okay.
Heather, this is Ryan. If I could get us back onto the agenda topic, because I think the two of them kind of meld together, both 7A and 7B. I kind of like what Dr. Taylor said. Originally, we put this on the agenda pursuant to Sean Murphy and John McDonald's request that it be added, but that was prior to knowing this executive order was coming out. Normally, they do a better job of notifying boards that the governor's going to do a press conference and then come out with an order. We didn't have any heads up on either. We, like Heather said, we have reached out multiple times to get some guidance. And what I think we may need to do is something similar to, I agree, I think probably you should test if you need to test to see patients or whatever to make certain that for your own peace of mind to be safe, your staff safe, other patients safe. I do know that the governor's office has stated that they have received multiple questions, mostly from the dental profession, because they seem to continue to get lumped into the conversation regarding MD medicine, and not so much DDS or DMD medicine. And so they've received multiple phone calls, and based on that, they're going to try to come up with some FAQs that they're going to answer and hope to answer. And I'm going to say this tongue-in-cheek, and this is not an open door to give liberty for everybody just to go out and start practicing. I have been told multiple times I have nothing in writing, so bear that in mind if you take what I say out loud and just start flippantly opening your doors for all kinds of patients. I have been told numerous times verbally that no order has ever been written to write out hygiene. Or dentists from practicing. There is some contradictory language within some of the orders that talk about it. In like 2020-10 that talks about to preserve the PPE and stuff like that. So there is some contradictory language to what I've been told directly from the governor's office. And we invited them to be here today. I don't think they're on. If they are, I'd be happy to stop speaking so that they can speak. But they did say that they likely will not have any information for us today. We spoke yesterday, Heather and I both spoke to the governor's office yesterday. They said that they likely won't have any information in time for our board meeting today, but they will hopefully next week so that dentists can have some sort of comfort level on what they can do starting May 1st. I hope I'm not overstepping any boundaries that have been set, but I wanted to speak on this, but I do think it may be wiser to just table, and maybe we never even have to address this again if things just start opening up, but I think Dr. Taylor's statement about tabling it later till later would be prudent.
Now, Ryan, this is Morrow. That opens a whole new ball of alarms on that when you talk about hygiene and hygiene involvement, because that's a conversation in and of itself.
Right.
Because I had someone who called up the governor's office and asked the question. They said absolutely hygiene's not going to be available. So I worry we make a comment and then have it be thrown out later on. But I wanted to, again, come up with some questions that we can propose and send on to the governor's office to help them with that FAQ that's coming out or some clarification.
Yeah, and I think Heather had already stated that. This is Ryan again. Heather had already stated that. They have not asked our board for any guidance, but I think it would be prudent to give them guidance, even though they haven't asked. And you're right, and that's why I tried to say tongue-in-cheek that, you know, that they have told me on, I can't count how many times, probably 3 or 4 times, that it was never meant to shut down dental practices, although that's effectively what it's done. And so, you know, to whatever extent they're in, and I'm talking to the policy advisors, they have hired, I don't know how many volunteer staff, but they literally, if the governor's office has hired volunteer staff just to screen phone calls and who should actually get the phone call. So, so the people that are calling in may be talking to a screener and not necessarily anybody that, knows the answer. So not that I have either, but I appreciate the comment. But I do think it's probably wise for the board, even though we haven't been asked for guidance, to give them some sort of guidance to help them clarify on their FAQs what can or can't be done.
Yeah, and this is Morrow, and that's the thing is we just got to eliminate the ambiguity. I think dentists and hygienists really want to do what's right, and I think we really want to follow the law. And the dentist, when we shut down practices, there was a little bit of anxiety, but we all pretty much followed the law. And if we can get rid of the ambiguity, is all I'm saying, then there's going to be less anger, frustration, calls to the governor's office. And if we can figure that out, that would be, I look at it as our number one goal.
Yes, this is Dr. Eddie Christensen.
This is Harding. I accidentally muted you after Morrow.
You are fine. I finished.
Am I able to make a comment? This is Dr. Eddie Christensen, oral and maxillofacial surgery.
Yes, hi, Dr. Christensen.
How are we doing? Thanks so much for letting me comment. I've been practicing, seeing urgent and emergent dental patients through this COVID-19 and through the restrictions. And we know our office has set up many parameters to be able to treat patients safely. And those that are in pain and swelling, infection, to be able to keep them out of the emergency department. At the same time, I've been covering level 1 facial trauma call at Banner Desert Hospital and Cardinal Children's for about 17 days out of this during this pandemic. The hospitals are essentially empty, and I've seen the trauma's down because people are not out, but we are doing our best to keep people out of the emergency department. But we have a questionnaire. We test check temperatures on every patient that comes in. We temperature check all of our employees at the beginning of the workday and at the end of the workday, and go over any cold or flu symptoms, they're not supposed to come in. Any patients that have cold or flu symptoms are not supposed to come in. So we have a questionnaire. We feel like we can safely treat patients in an urgent and emergent type setting, but also an elective setting too, once this May 1st comes along. So that would be my recommendation, is that we can move forward with elective surgeries with a simple questionnaire, vetting patients on the phone, and temperature checks. I feel like we can move forward with that. So thank you.
Thank you.
And this is Mauro, and maintaining social distancing in the office, I think, is very important too. You know, closing down waiting rooms, having people wait in their cars. All these things are stuff that we're doing already. And we're already treating emergency patients this way without getting the test. I'm getting to my personal opinion. Sorry.
Yeah, this is hard. It is hard not to. I have agreed with that from the time that everything was shut down. And I understand the recommendation for conserving the PPE, but at the same time, our PPE isn't even what they were needing in the hospitals. But when it comes to that or nothing, I understand that ours are better than nothing. So I also feel that even when they term non-essential elective surgeries, yes, hygiene, ortho, that does not fall under surgeries, but I do feel that it is still safe to practice with our PPE and our standards that we have and have always had with treating every patient, assuming that they have something. Universal precautions, that's what we're all taught. That is my personal opinion as well. So if we move forward directing from the board a recommendation, that is my personal opinion for a recommendation. And somebody did just say, what about the lack of PPE? We, in dental offices, I don't know about your dental offices, but that is not an issue that I've heard from any dental offices, that we are the ones lacking PPE.
Well, this brings up another point, though, Zamaro. What would be the required PPE? Are we talking N95s or K95s when talking aerosols? With the level 3 covering your N95, reusing that, re-sterilizing, this brings on a whole new level of what is required in the office setting. Is it just a level 3 mask? All these things are coming up. Now, when we talk about, there was comment about following OSHA, I get it, but we're in a new normal, and all those things are coming up. I think that N95s are going to be the way we need to go for a little while. I mean, I have no idea. That's, again, it's the dental boards. These are questions dentists are going to be asking dental boards all the time. We've got to come up with a solution on this.
This is Dr. Taylor. Why are we, okay, this is on the agenda, and we've discussed it. And until the governor makes a declaration or mandate, we can't make any type of policy or substantive recommendation until we actually understand. We're kind of putting the cart before the horse.
This is hard. We're trying to think of if we were to draft a letter that we could give guidance from on behalf of the dental community on how they then make their FAQs regarding both order.
This is Dr. Taylor then. So let's direct staff, table this, direct staff to draft a letter, and then we review it and then send it off to the governor. I mean, we all agree that, yes, this is important, but there's nothing we can do until the governor. I mean, the governor right now says we might open this thing up. We might open this thing up May the 1st. So if you follow CDC guidelines, you follow OSHA guidelines, poor dental hygienists are going to have to go back to skating and can't use Cavicron because of the aerosol until we figure that out. So, I mean, back in my day, we scaled people's teeth, and we didn't have a Cavicron. We didn't have any type of issues with that. So let's just wait until we hear from the governor's office. Let's direct staff to do some type of thing to the governor in regards to the board in reply to what he's asking, and we'll go from there.
So this is Ryan. It would be challenging, to say the least, for a non-practitioner such as myself to write a letter of guidance to the board. My preference would be, I'm happy to send it on, and I'm happy to start the process.
But I think
the what we, okay, so that's what I was going to request, is get some volunteers, and then ultimately we can maybe just have Heather as president of the board sign it, or Heather and Dr. Taylor sign it on behalf of the board in its submission, whatever will be easiest based on the new confines of work. So I'm happy to take anything. And Seth, I don't know if you're still on there. How does that work? How many, I would like to get some volunteers on the board, but I don't want to pass something around because of that whole, no pun intended, the Chinese telephone, where you get into an open meeting law. How would I go about this? Seth, are you available? All right.
Hello?
Oh, yeah, thanks. Awesome.
Yeah, someone muted me. So are you looking at getting all board members' input?
I just want a couple volunteers because I don't have the wherewithal or the knowledge of the dental practice, and that, you know, the whole aerosols and the Cavitron and the types of masks and stuff. So Sean Murphy from the association, the director of the Dental Association, his association put together some questions. I've already provided that to Heather. And Dr. Morrow has just volunteered to also help out with some sort of guidance letter to the governor. Can the two of them work together to come up with something and then ultimately she sign it? I'm trying to avoid the open meeting law and passing it to everybody for a response.
Yeah, the board can delegate the chair and, you know, Dr. Morrow or whoever to put together a correspondence and to send it out. But if you want all board members' input, it's going to have to be agendized and put into a meeting for discussion.
With all due respect, this is Beanstalk. Isn't this why we are here today, to discuss and offer guidance to protect the public and our teams when we reopen May 1?
Yeah, but I think the that's what you're doing. Yes, so to answer the question, yes. But after this meeting is adjourned today, you would have to reconvene to look at a follow-up correspondence. So if you want to come up with some guidelines together today and what you want to see in the letter, we could do that. So then you're providing guidance because of item 7B. But if everybody's going to review the document, we would have to have another meeting after it's been reviewed. I'll share it with everybody, but it won't. It'll be kind of a final for no input. Am I speaking correctly on this, Seth?
So why aren't we doing it now, is my question.
This is Hardy. I agree with Dr. Beanstalk.
Instead of
a separate committee, that we just move forward with recommendations, and then after we have those based on the board, then we direct staff to put it into a draft form.
Okay, so I'm happy to take down all the recommendations.
This is Dr. Hero. I think we're talking about two different types of recommendations. One is how patients are being screened and how staff are being screened prior to coming into the office, whether is it a questionnaire, temperatures, an actual COVID test. That's one conversation. The other conversation is, to me, would be the types of clinical procedures and safety precautions we take in performing those clinical procedures. The latter, the discussion regarding the clinical procedures, there's a lot there. And my only concern with, if we get too specific with that, is if we start recommending something that maybe doesn't follow ADA or AZDA, and can we know if we're going to follow them if we don't know what their recommendations are yet? I do agree we should try to flesh out as much of this as we can right now, particularly what our recommendation is with regards to how we're going to screen patients prior to them coming to the office and staff as well, and the need for an actual COVID test or questionnaires and vitals, temperatures, that sort of thing.
This is Beanstalk. I agree with Dr. Hero. As far as procedures go, though, I think we should leave it up to the providers to make that decision. It's their discretion.
I totally agree.
This is Sean Murphy. Can I, President Hardy, can I real quick just comment, jump in?
Yes.
Okay. So, and thank you for that. One thing I want to say, and I think the thing that's kind of derailed this agenda item is the executive order that came out very recently and what it requires and what it how it actually impacts the dental field. So just so everyone knows kind of the timeline, executive order comes out. Yesterday we sent our questions to the governor's office. I would say right now one thing that the BODEX could do would be to look at that executive order, maybe because I sent Ryan our list of questions in relation to the executive order. If there's any additional questions BODEX has, to also send those to the governor's office to get some clarification. But I do agree with the comments and the thought. I can tell you right now, there's all sorts of different changing, evolving recommendations coming out from the ADA, from OSHA, from the CDC, and, you know, they're backed by presumably science and findings. So I think that would probably be a very heavy lift for any state entity to undergo. Our whole thought in bringing the whole, say the testing is permitted under the definition of the Practice of Dentistry Act, is that it doesn't limit, it actually expands. So if COVID-19 tests become available, dentists then have the opportunity to use them. Be very careful to Dr. Taylor's earlier point. We don't want to end up putting something out there that restricts a certain type of practice of dentistry or a certain procedure that then, you know, it could even be the very next day or same day there's a finding from the ADA or CDC that disagrees with that. So
this is Morrow. I think we should actually go back to the agenda item on is this in our scope of practice, and let's get that off the table. And then we move on to the other stuff because there's a lot of other stuff going on.
So, again, Beanstalk, I think the testing should be up to the provider. We all do the screenings as far as the temperature checks and the forms that we have our patients fill out to protect our teams and ourselves and our patients. And then if somebody does, you know, check yes that they've been exposed or whatever it is, it's up to the provider to administer the test or not. They can refer out if they want, or they can administer the test. It should be the provider's discretion.
I agree, but does our license allow us to test is the question first.
That's what we're discussing right now, and I say yes, absolutely. During these times, the governor wants us to protect the public and wants as many people to help with that, and we as dentists, if we want to as providers, we can use our discretion to do so.
This is Morrow, so let's make a motion. Or do we need a motion, or do we just need a definition? What's the deal, Ryan, on this?
So providing a motion may make it more clear, especially since it's being recorded. Okay. But you can certainly do it. You could make the motion be a directive to staff.
Okay, this is Morrow. I make a motion directed to staff that testing for COVID-19 falls under the ability of a licensed dentist in the state of Arizona. That work?
So Hardy, scope of practice 32-1202. This is Hardy, I second. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
I think you need a roll call.
Hardy?
Aye.
Taylor?
Nay.
Beanstalk?
Aye.
Berg?
Aye.
Harmon?
Aye.
Hero?
Aye.
McLean?
Yes.
Morrow?
Yes.
Seaman?
Yes.
Motion carries. One opposed. Dr. Taylor. Thank you. So now we are going to go back to agenda item number 7A, the executive orders 2020-10, 2020-32, and I believe that we have been hashing with these back and forth, knowing that we haven't had exact guidance regarding dental from the governor's office. I would like to state one thing as just looking at this. When you look at the first executive order, 2020-10, that was signed in March, everything in dental was clarified as dental surgeries. Delaying non-essential elective medical and dental surgery will conserve hospital beds, PPE, and other equipment such as ventilators needed to treat COVID-19 patients. And whereas it continues on, we all in the dental community took that to mean it included our non-surgical procedures like hygiene, like ortho. All of that was shut down after this executive order came out, even though in the order it just said surgeries. So when we look forward to this new executive order and it says that elective non-essential surgery, if I'm reading the order on how we reacted the first time, that is also including what we in dental have, non-surgical procedures. So that's how I read that. But again, it's not individual interpretations. It's just based on how we all interpreted the first order and took steps in our offices. It would make sense that we continue to do the same for that, this subsequent order. So that goes to, this order doesn't mean, as we all know, that we can just jump back in. There is going to be an exemption process that needs to be followed. We don't know what that looks like yet. So there still is going to be guidance coming out from the governor's office. So that's where I think that we need to move to now, is looking at how we as a board would like to recommend on behalf of our dental community that guidance to be. So just as Dr. Beanstalk, Dr. Morrow, Dr. Hero, all of us started talking about, to hash out right now what we would like to put in a letter on behalf of our dental community from the board to the governor's office.
This is Harmon. I would like to see a recommendation to the governor's office that we don't need an exemption from this executive order, that we are leaving it up to our licensees to decide if we're ready to practice or not. Trying to jump through hoops and go through individual inspections and continuing to add layer upon layer of government-imposed restrictions, we're all trained in universal precautions already. This is not new things for us. We had H1N1 in 2009 where the CDC said there was 60.8 million cases. We didn't do any of this stuff. This is a new virus, but it's nonetheless still a virus. We've been through these things before. I just don't like having, you know, individual offices having to be inspected. We, like Dr. Morrow said before, we follow the law, we follow the rules. But what are those rules? And they shouldn't be burdensome. We should be able to get back to work.
So I think we need to make sure we have a clarification, Ms. Morrow, on hygiene, because it wasn't specifically listed in that order. I know we talked about dental services, but I think hygiene we need to get a directive on that, at least a question. I'm agreeing with Dr. Harmon. I believe it should be left up to the practitioner to decide what is going to be best for him, his staff, his patients, because that really falls on our own individual license that we're responsible for, all of those people in our practice. I think that's very rational and reasonable. I just wanted to make sure that we're not going to come back later and have the governor turn around and say, I said this and it did not say no hygiene, and I also said you had to have testing. And if we go against that, that goes against his order. That's the only thing I'm worried about. And, well, and their comment was dental services is hygiene, but it doesn't designate hygiene. It designated elective dental procedures. And I get it. I don't want to go CDT code by CDT code to determine what we can do, what we can't do. But we really are the face of all the dentists in Arizona. And if we don't highlight it and don't say you can or you can't, it's going to keep question marks in all the dentists' minds. Well, hey, what about this? Or that all the hygienists are saying, I don't feel comfortable going back, or I don't want to go back. I just think we've got to come up with a yes or no. And maybe that yes or no is leaving it up to the doctor's discretion. I don't know. I just wanted to make sure that we're following the order.
This is Hardy. Dr. Morrow, based on what you said, would you feel comfortable in our letter to the governor's office that we recommend as a board that we leave that we leave when it says elective non-essential surgery, that term up to the dental provider as to what that means? What procedures that?
Including all hygiene procedures.
Yeah, and all other procedures that we in dental deem as non-surgical, orthodontics, non-surgical.
Yes.
So that so you would feel comfortable with that. That would, hopefully we'll get some direction from the governor's office, but if we put that in, then it is up to each provider if they choose to open their office for those specific procedures.
I 100% agree.
Okay. I like also Dr. Harmon saying no exemption. I agree with that. I think that is going to be interesting if we have to jump through those hoops. How many staff are they going to have reviewing these exemptions? How do you prove that stuff? Is it up to the discretion of the office? But so that can be put in there. I think that also there needs to be something in there that it is mandatory for screening, not COVID testing. That by screening, I mean taking the temperature upon arrival. Questions specific to COVID-related symptoms on the phone, when confirming, and also upon arrival.
And maintain social distancing practices as long as they are in effect.
Or, this is Dr. Taylor, until deemed necessary or not necessary.
Well, that's what I say, while in effect, because there is actually an order talking about social distancing right now. And there'll be a certain period of time where they're going to lift that. I think that when they lift it, we should be exempt from that.
Right.
There is a question.
This is Dr. Taylor again. If we mention there too that we should say that we should follow the CDC, OSHA, and ADA guidelines, and that way that covers a lot of material.
I like. I'd say let's follow, because our rules and our laws talk about that we need to follow OSHA guidelines, because we are not under CDC guidelines in the state of Arizona. CDC guidelines are only, I believe, in Maryland right now that the dental board has adopted. So I think OSHA guidelines, because that's who we go through.
I agree. So break out the ADA and just put OSHA.
OSHA. And OSHA will adapt their guidelines to CDC.
This is Eddie Christensen again. Now that will allow us also to move forward with all elective surgeries as well. That will be included with our simple vetting process.
As long as this is the order we're giving to the government, or the governor rather, to clarify, and if he says, sure, go ahead, then it should allow us to do all procedures.
And, great, thank you.
And this Morrow again, and specifically ask about the testing issue, because testing is going to be really difficult for any dentist to open. We'd have to maintain the no testing for only emergencies, like we're doing, and that keeps us at the same boat we're still at. We because I don't think you have to test with emergency. So we got to get clarification on the testing.
This is Hardy. I think that when we're doing this, just like you said, that we are giving this letter to try to give direction. Some of the questions that are popping up in the chat are for clarification regarding the order. Our purpose that we're doing right now is that we can hopefully guide the governor's office when they are doing this clarification. So in this clarification, I also would like to add, in addition to the no exemption, that just like I said, that we have a mandatory screening, but we do not have a mandatory COVID testing.
Very good. This is Dr. Taylor already. Thank you.
If he agrees.
Yeah, of course. All of this may be for nothing. And just so everybody knows who possibly has just joined the call or just as a reminder, we have questions that I personally submitted. I submitted my own questions and I even forwarded ASDA's questions that I had a copy of. And I know they personally submitted them. So I have an email. I have phone calls out there. And Ryan does as well. So even though we're submitting this letter based on the dental community, it may be for naught. They may come out with their own FAQs on how they want to see it. So until that time, this is all we can do is give what we would hope would be guidance on how we see this for the dental community. Okay, is there any other? So I have so far to review for our board staff that we leave up to the practitioner for the PPE requirements. If they have enough in their office to proceed for that 2 weeks, let's say, then that is up to them that they can start moving forward. That we are requesting not to have to apply for the exemption. We are requesting no mandatory COVID-19 testing, but we will continue to do a screening process of a temperature, questions before and upon arrival. We will continue to maintain social distancing through the office, and we will follow the OSHA guidelines in regards to dental practicing. I just saw something with that came up on the chat. First of all, before I move forward with what I was just going to say, does anybody have anything else to add on?
I have a quick question. Do you have a specific date in mind? Is this immediate? Is this May 1st? What are we looking at? Are you even stating that?
This tomorrow for May 1st, as soon as possible. So that's next Friday.
I agree. This is Hardy.
This is Christensen. Should they remove from the governor's mandate? Should they remove any of those things that don't apply to us? Should we make that clear back to the governor?
Well, this is Morrow. I think what this is doing is clarifying the governor's mandate for dental. Because at this point, I think we're lumped in with medical. And we can just say, hey, the FAQs, that way the governor doesn't have to put out a new mandate, but under the FAQs, he can give direction.
And this is Hardy. In the chat, when you had spoken, Dr. Morrow, about the call from the governor's office about the hygiene and other non-surgical procedures, yes, that was a hearsay thing. That's what was in the chat. And that was also a hearsay thing that I saw as well. It actually came up on a dental Facebook chat. I did proceed to call the governor's office and spoke with that person that I saw that she had claimed she had spoken to somebody at the governor's office. I used the same phone number to call, and I was routed to the entry line at the governor's office. I was the phone was answered by a screener. The screener was able to type into a chat that who was on the call, myself. I represented myself as being president of the dental board, hoping that he would route me to somebody that would give us some clarification. And I told him why I called, that somebody had gotten this information. He said in the chats that he did not have that specific information to give me. and that he would leave a message for that person that I was requesting to speak to call me back or email. And they did say they were going to do that yesterday, but I did not receive one. I then proceeded to do my own email. But the one thing that he did say is they thought the governor's office was going to be referring a lot of these questions to DHS. So that was the only information. So we cannot go off of what was found because the people that were answering those questions, we don't know who they were.
So, and this is Mauro.
Can we ask, sorry to interrupt you, can we ask that DHS come to us to manage it? Because I think we're much better handled as dentists, you know, representation across the state to manage this or execute this, besides DHS.
That is, I agree, Dr. Beanstalk. This is Hardy, and that was even a recommendation that one of our license holder that sent in the email that we got for the further information had recommended. So that, yes, that Bodex manage our own license holders if we have to proceed with an exemption. That was what they have said. Is that what you're talking about, Dr. Beanstalk, if we have to proceed with an exemption?
Yes, absolutely. We should manage it, not DHS.
This is Mauro. I was going to say something very similar to that, as well as the reason why I brought up the comment with the governor was just to show that there was a lot of confusion. Not to show that that was the governor's response. So I apologize if I made that sound in any other way than that.
This is Vera, and I totally agree about us overseeing an exemption if that's not overturned for dental. I would even question, is it within the law for them to mandate Department of Health Services to oversee a dental board that's independent from them?
This is Hardy. I would have to say Ryan or Seth could probably answer better, but my understanding would be because that this is coming from an executive order regarding the outbreak of COVID-19, that they kind of get to do whatever they want at this point regarding the executive orders being put in place.
This is Mauro. They have full control over us because they are the ones that hold the license. We actually help issue all licenses, but they have ability to, they're the ones that dictate agreement.
So this is Beanstalk. So Ms. Hardy, in our letter that we're writing that's recommending guidance, we asked for there be no exemptions. Can we add in there, if they do insist on having exemptions, to have Bodex handle these exemptions and not DHS?
I love it.
Hardy, I agree. And I'm sure Ryan and board staff are writing it down as well. If not, I have it written down.
Thank you.
Are there any other recommendations that anybody would like to see go into this letter to the governor's office? Okay, so this is Hardy. I would make a motion that we would direct board staff to draft a letter containing each of the statements we said. I have a list of them if you do not. That would be a recommendation to the governor's office in response to their executive order 2020-32 regarding the dental community. I would also recommend that that board staff at that point shares the draft with me, since we need to not have a quorum when it comes to a discussion. But again, I do have everything written down that we talked about as a board and public, and that we will come up with a final draft, which, and actually I rephrase that to myself and Dr. Taylor, because that still will not be a quorum, and that we will have the signature, that the final draft will go out to the entire board to view, but it will not then be open to discussion. And then Dr. Taylor and I will sign it to the governor's office. That is part of my motion.
This is Dr. Taylor. I second it.
We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion?
Now, just a quick question to Seth. Are we okay legally? as far as quorums and dealing with the draft, the stuff?
Well, ideally, the draft letter would not be passed around before it's sent. Ideally, the letter would be reviewed, approved by the chair, go out, and the board members can get a copy of what was sent. But as far as sending it out beforehand, I think that creates a potential problem. If there is responses back or discussions, it would be better just to be given the letter after it's out.
Okay. So my motion is amended to reflect that the final draft will be sent to the board members after it has been sent to the governor's office.
Taylor, second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, everybody. I know that was a really long topic and one that everybody was interested to hear. And sorry we couldn't have been more factual based on the governor's office, but I think we did the best we could, and hopefully we can get some response moving forward before next Friday. All right, we're going to move to agenda item three. First, we're going to talk about 3B, which is COVID-19 Executive Order 2020-17. This is the board to review, discuss, and take possible action to approve the committee's recommendation to not allowing candidates to participate in electronic or remote examination formats due to its inability to test appropriately and protect the public. The recommendation included to continue to issue provisional licenses to candidates who meet all other licensing requirements except the in-person examination. So just as this says, the committee, we met last Friday to look at our laws, to discuss the confidant tube, and to look at the Executive Order 2020-17, which would have made, which allowed us to make a concession if we wanted to issue licenses without testing being available. We as a committee felt, because of the governor mandating that there is going to be a provisional license in effect for 6 months or 20 days after testing centers open, that we did not want to forego the clinical part of the examination. So that is where we brought the recommendation forward, or actually any part of our examination, because the written part will be able to go into testing centers as well. So we as a committee wanted to bring that to the board for full approval, that again, because we are out in the interest of protecting the public, the governor has provided a way for these candidates to get licensed in the interim due to things closing down with COVID-19, that we felt it would still be available to them to perform all their necessary tests that we in the state deem to protect our public.
This is Morrow. Ms. Hardy, I'm going to add to that a little bit from what we talked about. There was they had to take it up to 20 days after they opened. We deemed that to be unreasonable, and that they needed to be signed up within 20 days of them opening, because testing facilities can't come up with tests within a 20-day period. But we had to have them signed up for that and done before December 31st.
This is Hardy. That's correct. And that was actually a clarification in an email, that in that order when it said 20 days, it was not that they test within 20 days, it is that they then sign up within 20 days. We, and also based on that, and to the other committee members and the other board members, after the meeting, Ryan and I continued to speak on this matter, and we all understand the hardships that are going to be going around with different testing centers. The board is going to, of course, allow a bit of leniency to, if everything is booked up, to see we're not just going to pull somebody's license, provisional license, in that time. We are going to follow people. The board, when I say we, is going to, or the staff, I mean, is going to follow these provisional licenses to make sure that they are getting their requirements in, because they are going to know who they are. And they are also going to send out lists to the testing agencies of the provisional license holders So if agencies have tests that they may need to bump somebody from a test, the provisional licensees will not be the one that gets bumped because they will need to take these tests in order to keep their license. So this is going to be a very fluid thing. Also, with when it comes to any sort of pulling their license, this is going to be, we're going to move things forward. There's not going to be a line drawn in the sand until we see fit as things move forward because of the unknown of this whole thing. So again, the recommendation is to not change anything regards to testing for new candidates.
Our recommendation is to go forth with the governor's order, I guess.
Well, the only thing, the governor's order, but not including to go to online. We are not foregoing any of our testing.
That makes sense.
Any discussion on that? Then this is Hardy. I would like to make a motion that we accept the committee's recommendation to the board to continue to issue provisional licenses to candidates who meet all other licensing requirements except the in-person examination, which, as we just talked about, will come forward during their provisional license period.
Morrow seconds.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
This is Taylor.
President Hardy, this is Seaman.
Go ahead, Sip.
Thank you. I assume that this means that we, that it's not completely off the table to discuss different modes of examination in the future.
It is not right now on that agenda item. We are going to move forward to that agenda item next.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
That was my question, too.
Perfect. Any other discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Agenda item number 3A, statutory and or rule changes. And also in this is, I'll actually read it. Board to review, discuss, and take possible action to approve the committee's recommendation to update the board's current statutes and rules regarding license examination components, including the acceptance of the American Board of Dental Examiners, ADEX, Compudent Tooth, a simulated tooth developed as an alternative option in the Dental Licensure Examination Restorative Challenge. So before we get into the statutes and the rules, I'd like to talk about the Compudent Tooth first. This was a recommendation to accept this tooth for the Class 2 and or Class 3 restorative component of the ADEX dental exam. This was a vote that was of four people. It passed with two, one opposed. One opposed was Dr. Morrow and one abstention, which was Mr. Goodman. Both Dr. Hero and I voted yes to accept this tooth. And as I know that we were talking about this in the past, one thing that has come to light, which Mr. Goodman and even Dr. Morrow were concerned during the committee meeting, was we didn't want to be the first state, the second state that was accepting this tooth moving forward. And when I say that this recommendation from the committee, the recommendation was for not specifically to 2020 under the COVID-19, it was for moving forward as acceptance from here on out indefinitely. So CDCA has been going to many dental board meetings. They're actually on our call again this week. I apologize again for the delay in this. We had some long-winded topics before we got to this. But the states that have accepted this tooth with no restrictions, there are now six that have accepted it. States that have accepted it for 2020 only during this COVID-19 crisis, there are three in addition to that six. States that are still considering, we are one of those states, and there are 18 states, including us, that are still considering this tooth. There was also another test that was done that found that it was even a more improved exam compared to being on a live patient as well. And if anybody wants to hear some of that information, Dr. Champagne is available to talk more about another study that was completed.
This is Harmon. I've got a couple of issues with this too. First, as a board, we're going to have to really make a decision because a lot of these things are being taken out of our hands anyway, as far as the governor's new law and vaccine a year in another state coming over and all those kind of things. But my understanding is that despite what we're being told, this tooth does not actually cut like a natural tooth. We have not been supplied a sample tooth. And it seems like at our last meeting we were talking about this, the only people who were raising objections to it were people that actually cut teeth for a living. And again, I think my opinion could be changed rather quickly if I was able to cut a tooth. And even though it doesn't cut like a natural tooth, my understanding is much, much better than the ivorine teeth that we were used to in dental school. And that the dentin does have good pullback from Explorer, that it's very well done as far as that component is concerned. But they also boast that the exam is harder, that there were more failures with this tooth than in a live patient because they can change the depth of the caries, etc. But my concern is that it might be inherently unfair to the candidates because they never get a chance to practice on this tooth. So, you know, could you have an overextension on a tooth where you've never cut this density or this material ever before? That's a concern for me. It might be a moot point because they're in a license now. I'm very much in favor of using this tooth in a short-term interim during COVID-19 problem. But I, at the point without seeing one being a high speed on one, have a hard time saying, giving it a rubber stamp to go ahead long-term. That's where I'm at. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Harmon, one thing to talk about, and again, I am not somebody that cuts on the teeth like you do, but one thing in reference to not being fair to the candidates is we already accept an endo portion of all the examining agencies, and they use teeth that the candidates have not cut on before either, yet we still do accept that portion of the exam.
Now, Ms. Hardy, with all due respect on that, though, the reason for that test is not to determine how well you access. It really is to determine how well you build a tooth. And then the part with the prosthodontics, it really is so you can, you know, do a proper margin and proper taper and all the other stuff that goes along with that. I don't think it really tells you, okay, this is going to feel like a tooth. This is not going to. It just says, this is how you fill a root canal. This is how you prepare a crown. Where once you start talking about a tooth and a cavity, we have other things that come into play like decay and affected and unaffected dentin, colors, all those things that they say are in the tooth. Now, with that being said, that's not my concern on any of this. My concern comes down to we're putting a name on a tooth that goes into our board. We just pulled Reb out. Their name Reb out because Reb changed. Reb changed their policies and procedures, so we then had to change what we were to accept and what we weren't to accept. And if we said, hey, we're going to accept the Compudont tooth from 8X and then Reb's going to come along a little later and come up with their tooth. Well, what if we reject their tooth? You know, it just gets into a lot of different weird stuff coming down the pipe for me. That's where I have issue, not necessarily the tooth itself. I worry about putting verbiage and names of testing agencies back in our legislation.
And this is Hardy. Dr. Morrow, if you remember that we didn't put any of the wording back in there, nor am I proposing that we change our committee recommendations to put the Compudont tooth. This tooth would be something that we are looking at approving based on some of the new verbiage which that new verbiage that we are going to get to when we back up to the earlier part of this single agenda item, that we are proposing to change our verbiage to say a hands-on clinical examination, including the following portions, prosthodontic, endodontic, class 2, and class 3 restorative, and periodontal, administered by a state or testing agency in the United States within 5 years preceding filing the application. Non-patient-based hands-on clinical examinations are accepted with board approval. So I'm not asking or recommending that the committee or the board changes the committee recommendation. All I'm asking is that this tooth now be approved for use under our proposed language of a non-patient-based hands-on clinical exam being accepted with board approval. So not into license or not into rules or statutes, that we're just saying, okay, this is one that we would approve.
President Hardy, are we just approving, this is Seaman, are we just approving the one tooth today, or are we approving all non-patient-based exams?
So we are just approving this one tooth right now. We are changing, or the committee is recommending that the board, when we change our rules and our statutes, that we allow that any other non-patient-based exams needs to come before the board so we can independently review each one and then give its approval to a yes or a no. So at this point, this is the only one that's come before the board. So we are specifically only looking at this tooth. There will be others that come forward because that is the language we are recommending for approval from the committee, knowing that it's coming in our future. So we wanted to have the availability that it can come before us and we get the final say.
And Mrs. Harmon, not to beat a dead horse, but we haven't even seen this tooth. So if we're going to evaluate other teeth in the future, we haven't even seen this tooth.
So, and this is Hardy again. Dr. Waite, are you still on the line? Since I don't hear from him, then I'll refer back to Dr. Champagne as well. I was asking for Dr. Waite first because all of us know him as our former board member and board president that I think most of us regard in very high esteem, and he had experience with this, but I don't hear him on the line unless he's struggling unmuting himself. So to then go back to Dr. Champagne, are there anything that you would like to say to Dr. Harmon?
Oh, yeah, thank you for the opportunity. And actually, skepticism is a good thing on the part of scientists, so really that is a component of what our responsibility is. To answer this first, I understand that the board members have not actually, or most of them have no direct experience with the tooth, though about 50 educators around the country and twice as many examiners have, as well as the 550 candidates. I can share with you the feedback survey-wise that at least the restorative educators felt that, in fact, that it cut exactly like a tooth. In fact, two of their comments were if they closed their eyes, they couldn't tell the difference between the competent tooth and the natural tooth. And that was our goal. That's why it took it so long to develop. This is very coincidental that it happens to be completed with its evaluation right now. It was not developed for the COVID-19. It began over 3.5 years ago. The only reason we cannot provide teeth at this moment to board members to evaluate is because production is cut down. The manufacturer's under a stay-at-home order also. But that is being lifted slowly. There, we will get production up. Now we're trying to keep that production dedicated to the exam load that we have remaining in the process. And as you can imagine, that's rather significant. one of the things that we wanted to do, we did a mode effect study. So we're not asking someone to accept it based on our opinion. We had two independent psychometricians. They are not employees of CDC or ADEX or anybody else. They designed a study in advance where we studied the performance of this and compared it to the two cohorts in 2018 and 19 that took the ADEX exam, which is about 60% of graduates in the United States. We also had a half of that cohort do a class two on a patient so we would have a control group. I think there's a misunderstanding about the failure rate that it is quote unquote higher. Yeah, the raw number failure rate is higher or percentage. And the reason why is because the exam was uniform. So candidates today can game the exam. We all would. We would choose the smallest lesion we possibly could that would qualify and hopefully need no modifications so that we would never have to demonstrate an alteration to preparation due to decay. The reality is all of these teeth, you had to recognize decay. You had to recognize the difference between sclerotic dentin and caries, or even caries and decalcified enamel, which one which had to be removed, one which didn't. So that it was an affirmative test for everybody. It's actually fairer because every candidate is required to perform the same task, to recognize decay, to make a modification from the ideal preparation, at least one, to accomplish all the tasks that have to be done. If you normalize that for the fact that our control group in the class two had a 5% higher failure rate because it's a semester earlier in their training when they took it, at what is considered a relatively critical time, their last year of dental school, so that 4 months, presumably you have a lot more clinical experience. So the class two had a higher failure rate, though the failures were for the same reasons. So some portion of it is because it's earlier, and the other portion is just because everyone was challenged. It's not more difficult per se. It is a medium lesion, something that every dentist would encounter in their office. I wish we were able to provide teeth to everybody to see, but that's why we did the mode effect study, so that we could study its performance in advance. We would know how it compared to the actual exam. We could assure dental boards we were testing all of the components, the critical errors that we would normally test as part of the exam, recognizing decay, not overextension. Overextension on this tooth is not accidental. You cannot prepare the cut through the enamel without a high speed with water. So we had to have those facilities for the candidates use. It was done in the clinic, not in the sim lab, so all of these were done in a regular clinic environment in a fully assembled mannequin head. Literally 90%+ of the faculty and examiners felt that this was a adequate substitute for the patient-based exam, and we were expecting, like I said, skepticism on part of the board. We were hoping for skepticism on part of the board. That's why we did the mode effect study, so it's not an assertion. We could provide you with the data. It was nobody, and it was a very good point raised earlier. What about practice? This is an article, by the way, that is going to be published. The draft is almost complete, but the hypothesis is this is a replacement for a natural tooth or a simulation for a natural tooth. To test that hypothesis, we intentionally didn't have candidates practice because the preparation, if this is a replacement for the natural tooth, is treating patients. That's the same preparation for the regular patient-based exam. Even the graders did not have advanced experience because we wanted to test that hypothesis. Is your experience treating and evaluating natural teeth what you need to evaluate this tooth? Is it realistic? There's no prohibition against candidates practicing in the future. The reason we didn't allow them was to test that hypothesis, which was held up and supported. So really, I would not be overly concerned with the fact that candidates do not have the teeth to practice with because they've been treating patients. The bigger concern is they haven't been doing anything at all, potentially. So we want to give them time to be able to return practice with whatever modalities are available. For a lot of schools, quite frankly, across the country, this is going to be the only option because patients returning to exams is going to be very slow in coming. And I'll be happy to answer any questions if there are any.
And Dr. Wade is on the line who is having trouble unmuting. Dr. Wade, did I just unmute you? I think it is your number that I unmuted.
Well, I did star six. So I was listening to 9 o'clock. I just unmuted.
Oops, you got remuted. Do your star six again. There we go. Now we can hear you. Yes.
So, I know Guy went over that quite extensively. So, just the history that I have with the tooth is doing one of the pilot exams. I have not cut on the tooth. Again, there were several administrators from the school, students that said they had cut on it, that it was very similar to enamel and dentin, but I have not personally cut on the tooth. We did detect decay and those types of things, and that we were able to do. While I was trying to figure this thing out on the muting, I don't know if Guy mentioned, I know one of the comments was that students maybe wouldn't be able to practice on the tooth. My understanding is they may have some teeth that are similar to this that they'll be able to work on so they can get a feel for the tooth, but they don't have the actual, teeth that will be used on the exam, so they won't know to what degree. But I'm not 100% sure on that. Guy can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they'll be able to practice on something similar to it, but just not the teeth that will be used for the exam. Again, we felt like that the tooth, for a substitute for patients, that it was very close to working on the actual tooth. Obviously, I know Dr. Morrow had some concerns, which I always have had as well with patient-based exams, is the management of the patients themselves. Obviously, we can't address that issue, and it's not going to be the same. If a lot of times when these candidates are preparing these teeth and the exams on patients anyway, they're using rubber dams like you do in the office, that again, they don't feel quite as much with the tongue and saliva, but obviously we can't address that with a non-patient tooth like this. So that, if anybody has any maybe questions of me, any of the dentists there that weren't on that call last week that had a question that they may want to ask of what, again, like I said, I haven't sat there and cut on the tooth and actually prepped it, just saw what the students were doing and it was able to see decay that was left that they thought they had removed. And I did feel like it was good in the fact that those that have done exams, I've been examined for rep for 12 years and all of the exams that we've seen, students try to get the easiest tooth they can do. And I don't blame them. We did the same thing. You're always looking for the ideal lesion to do for the boards, but so many of these lesions are so small that when you look at them, especially in the anterior, a lot of them, they can even do facial access decay, and it really is not very challenging at all to them. They cut a very small prep, add a little bit of composite, and they're done, and doesn't really test their not skills of diagnosing and detecting decay and removing it, having to ask for modification requests. And this tooth does offer all of that. And again, I know Reb is apparently, because Dr. Christensen was on the call last week, Reb is getting a tooth together that may do all of those same things. And if the board approves this tooth, I would think that, again, they would be able to look at that tooth and hopefully they would approve that one as well. So where you were talking about having to go through this for every tooth, hopefully you wouldn't have to do that. But currently this is what you've got. It seemed to work very well. It seemed to test the students better than in a lot of the teeth that they had actually done on patient-based or on the actual patients themselves. So if anybody has any questions that maybe I could answer or elaborate a little bit more, I'm glad to.
This is Dr. Morrow. I did have one question that just popped up, and I don't know, Dr. Wade, if you can answer this or ask Dr. Champagne. Are they using the same tooth each year, or is this like a 2020 tooth and a 2021
exams?
I'll defer
that to Dr.
Payne. Yeah, this guy's Champagne. So the plan for 21 is the Typodonts will be delivered with, for example, 8 anterior lesions, 8 class 3 lesions, 8 class 2 lesions. We'll have radiographs for each one of those lesions. The candidate will not know which of the lesions they will be treating on that weekend. They'll be given the radiograph and told to diagnose and treat it. It will change throughout the series, and it will change throughout the exam series as we deplete the exemplar lesions. Greg was right. What we will do is the schools will be able to order these teeth really configured any way they want. The only thing they will not get is the identical teeth we'll be using on the exam. But the unique thing about these teeth is that the caries itself is variable. So, for example, the exact extension along the DEJ or axial penetration or the amount of affected versus infected versus sclerotic dentin changes. We wanted to reproduce the variability a patient has. So even, for example, during the cohort of the examination with the 550 candidates, they all did 8 mesial, but it was variable enough that no two were identical. We wanted the variance is plus or minus a half a millimeter. That's what we specified. We could do any we want, but that's what we specified to keep the difficulty range uniform. We evaluated that component too, and I can tell you that the first school in the beginning of October versus the last school in December, there was no change in performance in the exam. The fact that they, by that time, they all knew they were going to do 8 mesial did not change the outcome of the exam because of the inherent variability. That was part of what we're reproducing. No two patients are identical. You can't practice on the patients you're going to be treated. It presents a unique clinical situation. We wanted each tooth to present that amount of variability. It's not great. Like I said, it's only plus or minus a half a millimeter, but it might change in what looks like sclerotic dentin, maybe frank caries. It may extend slightly more incisally or apically along the DEJ. So we wanted that variability. In addition, all the lesions involved the contact, so we could affirmatively say that they were challenged to restore the contact. So that's another thing that changes pass rates. Candidates try to choose class 3 lesions that are apical to the contact so they don't have to restore it. So you obviously that can't be evaluated. But so I hope that kind of illustrates what we're going to be doing. There'll be a variety of lesions, not for this 2020 cohort. There isn't that large of a group left, to be honest with you, on who are going to take this exam. But for the 2021, Typodonts will present 8 different lesions for both the anterior and the posterior, and we will assign that based on the day you're taking it.
Chad, much better than I said.
Any other questions for Dr. Champagne or Dr. Waite?
This is Seaman. Dr. Champagne, when do you expect? I know it's really hard to predict, probably, but what are you forecasting as far as being able to do live patient exams?
As soon as they can resume. So Right now, the limitation, of course, is social distancing, how many, you know, bringing groups of people together. That's really our limiting factor right now. We've already talked to the manufacturers. We estimate that's going to be June 1st at the earliest for most schools in our discussion with the schools. And we have already scheduled receipt of the Typodons for that scheduling period. By the way, everyone gets a new Typodont. We do not use a candidate's Typodont. They're provided the Typodont's a new one every exam. So we'll be able to adequately complete it. The good thing is, of course, no PPE is required, so we won't be depleting that or competing for patients who have to be treated on a regular basis. There's no infectious aerosol, so the disinfection challenge that we're all going to face in dentistry won't be present in this exam, obviously, because there is no infection. So it's really going to be the school's ability to host an exam and social distancing. We're prepared to go as soon as that happens.
So this is the same thing again. So my question was more on the live patient. I think you talked about the type of it too, but
Oh,
the live patient
exams
too?
Well, live patient exams as well. So we have not eliminated our live patient exam. We'll be able to administer live patient exams when schools can host them. And that's a question that's best answered of the institution, because obviously it's when they can host the exams that are going to determine when we can do live patient-based exams. Most schools, and I know Alex is on the line also, and he's dealt more directly with the schools, but a lot of the schools we're talking about, the two, are talking about the end of the summer or fall before they think they're prepared for the challenge that a clinic of patients would present.
This is Dr. Wade. Sorry, I don't know if it's Mr. Seaman or Dr. Smith. In your question, what they could do to so, can you hear me?
Yes.
Sorry. So, I know Rev has exam scheduled for the end of May and the 1st of June, and then a lot of them that were rescheduled are through June, July, and like Dr. Champagne said, probably are going to be into the fall. If those exams don't get canceled, but they currently have exams, patient-based exams that are scheduled for the end of May, first part of June, and then through June.
Yeah, and this is Guy Champagne. We have an exam scheduled in the middle of May. It's a patient-based exam. We're hoping that will go, but it's really all based on the institutions and their ability to separate, disinfect, have the appropriate PPE, which, you know, as I've been listening today, you're coping with that challenge as every state in the country is coping with that challenge.
Any other questions for Dr. Champagne or Dr. Waite? Mrs. Hardy. So again, I would just like to bring forward for the other board members. I know we talked about it a couple weeks ago, and then again at the committee meeting last week, voicing the concerns, which I think have continued to stay the same, and they are valid concerns. I am not discrediting or discounting any of them. But why I felt it was important to continue forward as a board member, is because I feel that, well, it's not just I feel, this is coming in our future. We all know that the ADA has their DLSP. Anybody, I know that Marilyn and myself and board staff were on the call from Wednesday as they were looking at it. They even brought it to the committee to look at as an option. That has absolutely no hands-on component to it. I, as an examiner, know that I want to keep a hands-on component in initial examinations, because I've seen some of the outcomes that there are some people that need some remediation. So I am not in favor of just approving every non-patient-based exam, even though I feel that there is going to be a big push for that in the future. I think that somebody may go directly to the legislation, and we may see something mandated that we then have to follow, and we don't have a choice in it. So since I was a part of this, again, obviously not cutting on the tooth, but I was at one of the pilots, and I saw how the exam went. I saw what the educator said, what the other examiner said, and what the candidates were then saying and how they felt about it and what the results were. And I feel that this is a good substitute for a patient-based exam. If I had my ideal, would we just continue how things have been? Yeah, for right now, I agree. It takes out some of the components like saliva and cheeks and tongue, that type of thing. But I think we always need to be looking ahead at the future. And if we're looking at non-patient-based coming in our future, and it is, I want to have some control over it. And I think that this would be something good as a first step. And it's not even a first step, since we already use and accept endo and pros to be on a non-patient-based performance as well. But that's why I continue to bring it forward. So, again, I am not discounting or discrediting any of your reverence or skepticism, because just as Dr. Champagne said, that's not a bad thing. But so that was my opinion on it, and if we have any more, otherwise I'm just going to move it forward as a vote.
This is Dr. Hero. I just on that, President Hardy, I during the committee meeting, I, just like Dr. Morrow and the rest, you had a lot of hesitation with any non-patient-based clinical exam. But this is really just giving us the option to potentially approve something down the road. It was my understanding of it. So I think providing the board with options, given a circumstance that may come up that we can't predict, and then a tooth or a format which we could direct a potential applicant to utilize, I think it's nice for the board to have options, and that was why I supported it.
This is Harlan. Could I get just some clarity on that? That really confused me. I thought this vote and this recommendation was approving the student, not the possibility of approving.
Dr. Harmon, that is a good point. And on what Dr. Hero had said, if we vote to approve the committee's recommendation, this would mean that we are approving the Compudent tooth starting now and moving forward to be accepted for the Class 2 and or Class 3 restoration part of dental exams. So it would then be the student's choice. They can still use live patients. That will be an option during their test, or they can choose to use this tooth. They would get that choice. It wouldn't be something that we would direct them to.
And again, this is permanent. This is not a temporary COVID-19 thing.
Correct. That is what the committee recommendation was. This is not a one-year COVID-19 2020. This
Thank
is
you.
Moving forward.
I appreciate that clarification, President, because I thought it was a case-by-case basis moving forward. The board would vote on to approve if they were going to accept non-clinical testing in that with those parameters.
So one question, the only thing that's been lingering on my mind on Dr. Harmon's point and when Dr. Champagne said, would there be, and I already know the answer to this, desire before we move forward for a vote to wait until some of their supplier opens back up? And Dr. Champagne, would that even be a possibility that obviously things are starting to open back up? So if you were to table this and then allow some of the teams to be sent to the students on the board so that they could benefit from
them? This guy, Champagne, I don't see why not. Alex is on the line too, I think, still. But we could send you some of the earliest production so that when we have it, you can you know, the board members who want to try to prepare the tooth can prepare it.
This is part of that. The whole hypodont. Six members on. We just need six individual teeth. Changed my opinion in.
This guy, Champagne, again, I will probably just send you the Typodont because holding it in your hand is probably not a realistic feel, so it's no different for us to send you the whole Typodont and a potential, and even a pole to mount it on a chair, not the shroud, not the head, but a pole so you could take it to your office and in a very realistic manner, see what it's like.
I like
that. It would probably be late, mid to late June before we could get that, but we're happy to do that for you.
So this is Hardy. I would then make a motion that we table this part of the agenda item, so specifically in referencing to the Compunot tooth acceptance, until we are able to have six Typodonts sent to the representing dentist on the board that they can then test them out.
This is Dr. Taylor. Before I second that, I'd like to make a clarification. On page 8 in this rule changing and statutes that you're doing, is this also included in what we're talking about?
No, we're not talking about any of the rules or statute changes yet.
Okay, all right, then I second that.
Okay, so again, to clarify that motion, this is breaking down that agenda item specifically to only talk about the Compunot tooth, that we will bring the possible acceptance for the restorative class 2 and or class 3 portion of dental exams to be tabled after or while the dentists on the board are able to practice on the tooth. Then we will bring it back to the agenda. So any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. So, Alex and Ryan, I will direct for you two to be in communication if that's okay. That Alex, maybe you can contact Ryan when that availability would be and get them sent out.
Absolutely. That would be my pleasure to do. And I just was sending Ryan a text in the chat to that regard.
I just got it. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Perfect. Thank you.
Good to see you.
Thank you.
So yeah, now we will move on to the other part of the committee recommendations, and this is the statutory and or rule changes. So to Dr. Taylor's point, starting with the recommendations from the committee. So again, if you all remember that this started about a year ago, Dr. Waite and my request, because we have Western Regional Examining Board listed in our statute, when they changed their exam, that we were forced to accept it with those changes, even though we didn't agree to everything that was happening. So we wanted to change our rules and statutes. So what you have in front of you is what the committee had recommended. So we can go through line by line. And this would be on our board packet starting on page 7. You will see in red the things that are striped, and you will see in blue the things that we recommended changing it to. And then for page 7, there are some comments also that we will also need to answer as well.
This is Dr. Taylor on page 8.
Can we do page 7 first and get through line by line?
Okay.
Thank you. So on page 7, how it said this will likely need to be defined in statute, it says that off to the right. I thought we could add on, and again, I am open to other recommendations that since it needs to be a bit more defined, that we could say non-patient-based hands-on clinical examinations are accepted with board approval when competency of the exam is as effective as a patient-based exam. Would that work for defining it? I guess maybe asking Ryan or our help from our rule writer.
So this is Ryan, and I'll probably do more deferral to Jessica Ross. And I'm sorry, Jessica, if I got the name wrong again, but I know her as Jessica Ross. So she is the one that's making these requests. And I think she goes by Jessica Thomas, too. So when you look at the document, it's got like a JT over on the right. That's her question, because when you put words in your statute or proposed statute, if you put words that aren't defined somewhere else, it becomes ambiguous, and legislatures and lawmakers start getting concerned with what does board approval look like? What does that mean? And ultimately things just die simply because there wasn't an answer to begin with. So we either need to create a definition of this somewhere else within the board's definition, or it has to be super clear within the actual statute. I'd like Jessica to comment here as well. Christine, were you able to get a hold of Jessica? Is she on?
She is on the phone. She may be having problems with the mute.
Sorry, can you hear me now?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so sorry. This is Jessica. So there's two issues that I had when I was reviewing this language and drafting it. First, I don't give legal advice to the board, but my concern would be that non-patient-based seems very broad to me, and someone who is not familiar with the industry, when I read that, I don't know if that means that you're working on, you know, some sort of plastic model or it's some sort of electronic model. I'm just not sure what non-patient-based means. And I could see someone arguing that, you know, it means one thing versus not something else. So I think that that's one concern or question that the board should consider. The second issue is upon board approval. That is going to lead to questions regarding how the board approves these types of exams. Is there, you know, some sort of standard criteria? And I think that even the suggested language of, you know, that provides for competency at least as much as, you know, a hands-on patient-based exam also begs the question, what does that competency look like? And so I think you're going to likely need to identify or address both of those, if not in statute, then likely in rule, in how you administer that particular language. So what if we were to say, instead of as effective, as similar to patient-based? I know that's still a broad definition and not defining, but I suppose when we started talking about this, and I think that everybody would be in agreement, and correct me if I'm wrong, that when we look at wanting to have in our statutes to allow for a non-patient-based, you could hear from a lot of the language, even just talking with the confidant tooth, is that we want this to be something that is representative of working on a patient. I just don't exactly know how to say that in legal terms. This is Jessica. I think you could definitely put into statute something along those lines of, you know, that shows an applicant's competency as effectively as a patient-based exam. It's just going to be incumbent on the board then to identify in rule how the board is determining whether or not those
exams are comparable, if that makes sense.
It does. So something in addition to what I added on that, and again, please, other board members, I'm just thinking out loud, so I'm definitely open to your suggestions, that we could add into rule that we could say how we define that effectively or similar, whatever we decide, is what we just done. That would be determined by board testing the exam. So how the tooth, for instance, the comprehensive tooth is actually being sent to our practitioners and they are going to cut on that tooth. So that would be one thing that we would, that we could put in there. That's one way that we are going to test a non-patient based. By being present at an exam, our board members are also examiners. So we go and I can't cut on a tooth, but I can give you my experience that when I was at a pilot for an exam and I brought that back to you. So that was one thing that was determining in my determination for it. What do you all think? And to Jessica, am I hitting the target there?
Yes, I think that even as written with no further changes, I think that's fine. I would just have the board keep in mind that if and when this statute change is made, you will then likely have to address what board approval means in your rules. And that's where you could really dive into, you know, saying that the board approves exams based on X, Y, and Z, and then whatever X, Y, and Z is in your rules versus putting it into your statute. I would actually recommend going that direction because typically what you have in statute is broad language that allows the board discretion to administer its program, and then in rule you have the actual criteria of how the board is administering or enforcing its statute. So even if you left the language as is, I think that would work. And then you would just need to do either further discussion or further analysis on what the board thinks a comparable exam would look like and how it would go through that approval process to say, yes, this exam is comparable versus no, this other exam is not comparable.
Okay. So with that being said, how does everybody feel with the wording on page 7, number 2?
President Hardy, this is Seaman.
Yes, Dr. Seaman.
The wording for the whole thing is a little confusing for me because at the beginning we don't specify that it has to be a live patient, hands-on clinical examination. So we really don't need to come down to the bottom and say that a non-patient-based exam is required, if that makes sense. And unless we want to put in at the beginning that it's a live patient hands-on clinical examination is required. And so I would suggest that we don't even put in there that a non-patient based hands-on clinical examination needs to be approved, but all of our clinical examinations need to be approved by the board.
President, this is Hiro. I think this is where my confusion came in with the confidant tooth as well. And I don't want to create more confusion, but if any non-patient-based hands-on clinical exam has to have board approval, then doesn't that carry over to that confidant tooth that if that is going to be utilized, that falls under non-patient-based hands-on clinical, which then has to be approved?
Yes, and that's why it was on the agenda. So okay. That would be the first thing that we were then approving. And to Dr. Seaman's point, great catch. I agree with you. I would be more in favor of saying live patient hands-on clinical examination, including the following portions, and then continuing with the rest of it as stated. We already have some that are approved that are a non-patient base that will stay under approval, but all the others we're saying we want to continue on a live patient unless moving on to, for instance, that second part of the new rules, I don't foresee that it will be an applicant getting the exam approved. I see it as an examining agency that will bring forth future possibilities for non-patient based. So I would be more apt to want to change the first part of the language. What does everybody else think? Dr. Morrow, what do you think? You were on the committee as well when we came up with this language.
I think it seems reasonable. Everything you've said so far, I'm on board with in terms of, as well as Dr. Seaman's comment. I really like that.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I don't have any objections, so I've kept quiet.
Okay, so then I'm going to make a motion that we accept, and I'm going to do this one by one, you guys, page by page on each motion, because I think it'll be easier in the long term. So this is in regards specifically to 32-1233, number 2. I make a motion that we accept the committee's recommendation to change it, but we change the wording to now represent a hands-on live patient clinical examination, including the following portions: proxedonic, endodontic, class 2, and class 3 restorative and periodontal, administered by a state or testing agency in the United States within 5 years preceding filing the application. Non-patient-based hands-on clinical examinations are accepted with board approval. That is my motion.
This is Dr.
With that motion, I know that that will mean that we will need to be defining more in our rules. And I apologize, did we have a second?
Morrow seconds.
So we have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? Just this one.
This is Dr. Pitt. If you say live patient in there, the part of it isn't live.
Right. This would, as stated in the preference, this would only be moving forward on the others, and we are still going to be accepting what we already take, because that's where we put with board approval. So we already are taking the pros portion and the endo portion on a non-patient based, so, or a non-live patient based. So okay. Because we're already accepting that, that's going to fall under one that has already been accepted with board approval.
Okay.
Any other questions, clarifications? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Moving down to the bottom of page 7, and then I pass Dr. Taylor in tears. The commenting part, is there a National Dental Therapy Board examination like there is for dentists and dental hygienists? There is. So they have their state exam in Minnesota that they're doing. I know that ADEX is at least in the process of one. I'm not 100% if they have theirs up and running. If we have, we have Dr. Champagne still on the line. He can speak more to that. I know that there are some.
Yeah, this guy Champagne. Yes, we administer, you're talking about a mid-level provider type exam?
That is correct.
Yes. Yeah, we administer it in Ohio, and we also administer it in Minnesota.
Perfect.
And any other state that has requested it.
Thank you. Jessica, does anyone have more questions?
This is Jessica. Can you hear me?
Yes.
So my question is really related to making sure that the statutes are consistent between the dentist, the dental hygienist, and now the dental therapist. And so I'm really wondering if when we take out the Western regional language, if we should be inserting something about a national dental therapy examination, similar to how it's currently written in, I believe it was 1233, and then the statute further down about dental hygienist.
No, this is Dr. Dr. Taylor, you're misunderstanding. The National Dental Board examination, there's a written part that they have to do, and it doesn't have to do with the clinical part. Jessica, this is Dr. Taylor.
So when I'm looking at the statute, 1233 for dentists says that they have to have passed all of the following, which includes the clinical examination that you guys are making changes to. But the first one above that says the written National Dental Board examination.
Right.
There's similar language in 1285 relating to the National Dental Hygiene Board examination. So my question was, for 1276-01, is there a written National Dental Therapy Board examination that they should be passing?
No. Yeah, is it determined when you go to section 32-12332, because that's where it's referencing, an examination that is substantially equivalent to the requirements of the state as determined by 32-12332. Because I apologize, as I'm trying to share the screen, or as I think Ryan is sharing the screen, I cannot read that. So short of me pulling up all of the other statutes.
Okay, so this is Jessica again. So then what I'm hearing is that there is not a written National Dental Therapy Board examination that they have to pass. It's just the clinical that is referencing back to the 1233-2 section.
No, there is both. They have both also. So I want to pull up that language.
What language are you pulling up, Heather? And I'll see if I can throw it up on the screen. 32-12332. Okay. You're talking about the current language and the way it reads now, correct?
Correct.
Let me redo this real quick. It's 1232.
Yes, and I found it. So 32-12233 says an applicant for licensure shall have passed all of the following, and this is just for licensure. I don't see it specifically for dental hygienist, dental therapist, nor dentist. It just says an applicant for licensure shall have passed all the following. Number one, the written National Dental Board examinations. Number two, the Western Regional Examining Board examination or a clinical examination administered by another state or regional testing agency in the United States within 5 years. So when we refer back in specific, we wanted to say, so let's see, licensed hygienist, graduates, and that this is saying that the requirements substantially equivalent to the requirements of the state as determined in 32-12332. So, and that's what we're changing. It already says in number one that there's a written exam. We're changing the language to take out Western Regional.
So, this is Jessica. So, do dental therapists, okay, so I guess first let me clarify. The language for 32-1276.01 is relating to dental therapists. And they have to successfully pass both of the following, which is being changed to mirror the requirements of the clinical exam that is required for dentists under 1233. I guess I'm confused because 1285 looks like it's applicable specifically to dental hygienists. And so I guess I'm wondering what written national exam are dental therapists, are all dentists, therapists, and hygienists supposed to be taking the National Dental Board examination?
A written National Dental Board examination, yes. And it doesn't mean for a dentist, it just means the dental board examination, which would be applicable to each specific license.
And I think so, if I speak for just, and I don't want to totally speak for it, but in 1233 it says dental board exam, but if you see here it says dental hygiene board exam. So she's wondering, since we've culled out two professions essentially within two different statutes, is there something going to be called the National Dental Therapy Board exam? And like, is that what you're asking, Jessica?
Right, because it seems to me that if the language in 1233, the written National Dental Board examination, if that was intended to require dentists and dental hygienists to complete the written National Dental Board examination, then why does 1285 specifically call out the National Dental Hygiene Board examination? It seems to me those are two different exams.
Yeah.
Okay, I understand. Yes. So
I agree. I would say you wouldn't need 1285 if 1233 was applicable to hygiene as well.
Right. So then we need to add in that there is a National Dental Therapy Board examination for the written component in addition to what we were already changing for the clinical component.
Correct.
Okay, so could we do it that we could direct Jessica to add that verbiage as mirrored by the dental and dental hygiene portions to the subsequent dental therapy portion as well, in addition to the changes that are listed at the bottom of page 7 for 3A? And then it would be 1 and 2 to finish off. Jessica, would that in my motion clarify and make that work?
Yes, this is Jessica. I believe it would. That's where I was trying to go. Thank you guys for bearing with me. That was my question, whether there was a separate exam for dental therapists versus the hygienist and the dentist. And it sounds like there is. And so, yeah, I think adding that language to those changes would address that discrepancy.
Thank you. So I have a motion on the table. Any second?
Taylor, second.
Motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. All right, Dr. Taylor, I apologize for putting you off. Page 8.
That's okay. I'm all ears. Page 8. So with that being said, then down there on 32-1285, it should read, and number one, the National Dental Hygiene Written Board Examination. Since we did that for the therapist and we did that for the dentist. And number two, you crossed out a clinical examination. That's the only way they can take the hygiene exam right now is a clinical. So that needs to be left back in there.
This is Jessica. So the reason that language was taken out was because It's actually referring back to 32.12.33.2, which already states that it's a clinical examination.
As long as it states that, then I'm fine with that. But it should be specific to the hygiene, because the dental, in that one above, I mean, in page 7, that's referring to the dentist, and we did say that there was a clinical examination still.
So this is Ryan. If so, instead of rewriting everything, she's trying to just, and this was at our behalf, she's trying to clean up the statute so it doesn't continue to be as lengthy. And so if you, I don't know if you can see in right now where, I don't know if you can see what I've just highlighted, that this, where it says section 32.12.33.2, right at the very bottom of page 8, instead of rewriting everything as 1233, she's referencing back to 1233 in 1285 so that you're not rewriting everything three times.
And this is Hardy, and this is where it references back as what Ryan is saying, that what we just talked about and we approved is a hands-on live patient clinical examination, including the following portions. Now, hold on. As we refer back to that, 33.2, as we refer back to that, we actually cannot refer back to that because that is 100% for a dental exam, and hygienists, there's no way that they can have a prosthodontic, endodontic, class 2 and class 3 restorative and periodontal portion. So, yeah.
Thank you, Heather.
So to Dr. Taylor, to his point, yes, unfortunately, we are going to need to keep some of the verbiage in there.
So on the 17th when we met, there was discussion that the 1285 should mimic 1233. And that's why, and we just said, okay, so let's reference back to 1233. So then we need to restate. So it should say number one, 32.12.85.1 should say the written. So we need to add the word written National Dental Hygiene Board exam. And then two, you're going to have to then word that out. From our notes, it was clear that you wanted it to mimic 1233. But,
yes.
But now it's not. Is that correct?
I agree. I think that as a committee, we didn't realize, we thought it would be easier referencing back, not even thinking that what we're referencing back is very specific to dental and not applicable to at all hygiene. So I still think that we could use some of the same language.
This is Dr. Taylor. Can we just say a clinical hands-on patient-based exam within 5 years before filing the applicant's application and examination, and that is.
I agree with you, Dr. Taylor. I would like to add a little bit more specific, like we did with the dental part, to say a hands-on live patient clinical examination within 5 years preceding filing the application. Okay, wait, excuse me. Let me back up. A hands-on live patient clinical examination administered by a state or testing agency in the United States within 5 years preceding filing the application, non-patient-based hands-on clinical examinations are accepted with board approval. So it basically does mirror that exact same one that we changed it to. I only took out where it was the listed out portions of that. Would you agree with that, Dr. Taylor?
Yes. Thank you.
Was yours a motion, by the way? I believe it was.
Yes.
Okay, so that was a motion. I would second that motion. Any discussion? And with that motion, Dr. Taylor, to clarify, so then we are approving everything that we stated, not just that one, but also to add on to being a written National Dental Hygiene Board examination.
Yes.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries.
This is Jessica. If I could interrupt for 1 minute, so sorry. So is the reference back to 1233.2, which has all of those, you know, the following portions, is that still applicable, though, to the dental therapist?
So...
So she's talking about all of these, where you put the following requirements, the prosthodontic, endodontic, class 2 and class 3. Is that applicable to dental therapy?
So I'm going to need some help from the practitioners regarding dental therapists, but they cannot perform endodontics, can they? Or prosthodontics, like would be administered from clinical examinations, correct? Or maybe this is a better question for Dr. Champagne and there, for instance, to give us a reference to the ADEX examination that is being administered. Do they have specific components like they do for dental?
This is Guy Champagne, yes. We have to do an occupational analysis and blueprint for every exam we give, and they all have multiple components, which we can provide to you.
What are the components? The dental therapy clinical examination.
I'll defer that to Alex, since I don't actually personally administer that. Is Alex still on?
I don't think he is.
Oh, we'll get you that, but there are several components to comply with the occupational analysis and the regulations in both Minnesota and Ohio and elsewhere. Maine, et cetera, that we administer it.
President Hardy, when they were talking about dental therapy, taking the exams, and they were talking about, say, equivalent to the REV exam at the time, they were supposed to take the portion of the class 2 or class 3, so the restorative portion, they weren't taking the endo portion. They can't do endo. Since their statutes in Arizona says that they're already a hygienist, they didn't have to do the perio portion. So really the only portion they were having to take for the REV exam, and I'm sure it'd probably be the same for CDCA or any other testing agency, would be the restorative portion. So again, I think if you're requiring the way you're it was supposed to be done that they, in a way that when the examiners were giving that exam, they didn't know if it was a dentist or a dental therapist that was actually taking the exam. So if you're requiring a class 2 and a class 3, then the dental therapist would take them right along with the dentist, with the testing agency and doing the class 2 and the class 3, if that's helpful at all.
Thank you. And Dr. Waite, you're not familiar. They obviously can't do PROS. Like you said, the perio is not required, so.
Right, yeah. It was just the restorative portion because they can't do PROS either. I forgot PROS, yeah.
Okay, so then that does clarify. And how would you feel if we kept all the language the same as for the dentist, except for it would only indicate class 2 and class 3 restorative?
That's fine with me, but that's up to the board.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Thank you, Dr. Waite, though.
This is Dr. Taylor, Ms. Hardy, I agree with that. Just class 2, class 3.
Okay. On a side note, Deb Kappas put in there that she doesn't think that there's a National Dental Therapy Board exam, so she's talking about the written component of that. Dr. Champagne, representing the board, your examining board, what is your recommendation?
I'm sorry, I really don't understand what you're asking me.
Is there a written national demotherapy exam?
I don't know.
Okay, so for Hardy, I think unfortunately with that portion of it, Jessica, are we able to, and I'm going to be talking on two different parts now, table for the dental therapy about the national or written portion, because we're going to need more guidance on that. And then the second portion, did it make sense as to what I was recommending that I'm going to also further in a motion for both things? That we change it and follow parallel the dental portion, but we only list out, or the dental statute, but we only list out for the following portions, class two and class three restorative, and everything else will mirror the dental.
Yes, both of those make sense to me.
Okay, so I would like to make a motion reflecting exactly what I just said. We table about the written dental therapy, because we need to find out if there is one. And then we change the clinical, as I stated. Do we have a second?
Second.
So we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
According to Deb Capps, she said that they do not have a dental therapy exam, only a dental hygiene. According to the Joint Commission on National Dental Examiners.
This is Dr. Taylor. That's what I said previously. There is no written exam for therapists.
And this is Marilyn. They would have already taken that written dental exam.
You mean for the hygiene, because they're a hygienist in our state?
Yep.
Yeah, hygienist.
Exactly. Okay.
So then, Hardy, I amend my motion instead of tabling that part of it. I think we need to strike that wording because it's not applicable. They don't have a written national board because they've already taken their dental hygiene written board. Once they continue on, they're going on to clinical.
So this is Jessica, just so that I'm keeping up with you guys on what statutory changes you're looking to do. I'm hearing that there is no national dental therapist examination, and so all they would have to complete would be clinical examination that includes the class two and class three restorative, as well as the Arizona Dental Jurisprudence Examination. Is that
correct.
Accurate?
Yes.
Okay.
I think we had it right in the very first time, and then we tried to change it and then put it back. So thank you, Deb, for clarifying that for us. Okay. So with that being said, motion, and Dr. Taylor, did you second my? Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion regarding just that written portion part for dental therapy, striking that verbiage that we did just vote to put back in? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay. So I don't have any other questions until page 155. Does anybody have anything in between? And if nobody does, then would it be okay, Ryan, for me to make a big motion regarding all the pages in between page 8 and 155 to be approved? Oh, so actually, I take that back. For this agenda part, this would only go to page 13. I'm sorry, I'm confusing some of the agenda items. So I have no other, from page 8 to page 13, I have nothing else that I needed to bring up for changes.
Are you making a motion?
So I make a motion that we accept the committee recommendations for pages 9 through 13 as written.
Taylor, second it.
Motion is second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Now we're going to go down to agenda item number 5, the 5-year rule review, board to review, discuss, and take possible action to approve the draft 5-year rule review for submission to the Governor's Regulatory Review Council.
Do you make a motion?
Hold on.
From 43, letter B, number 8. It says general anesthesia, but it should be dental anesthesia. This is Beanstalk.
What page are you on, 143?
No, 43 in our packet. Yeah, there you go. No. It was under the advertising section. It was R4-11-1102. It's where we list all the specialties, and it says that general anesthesia is a specialty, but I believe the correct verbiage is dental anesthesia.
And Dr. Beanstalk, can you repeat what it was? R4-11-what?
1102.
Sorry for everybody watching me go through this. Hey. Right here?
Yes.
Okay.
It says general anesthesia.
And it should say...
Wouldn't that be dental anesthesia?
What page are you on, Ryan?
161.
Okay, and then backing up as well from that one on page 155 of our board packet. I'm getting to it. Hold on. So we have Article 7, Dental Assistance, R411-701, and right in the middle of that we have under, if you scroll down to page 156, letter B, we then throw in dental therapists. So Jessica, I think that that may be a mistake as to where it's being put in to the article. I think that it actually should be its own article, Article 6, which currently is dental hygiene. And then it would move all the subsequent articles down. So dental hygiene would then be Article 7. Dental assisting would then be Article 8.
Sure, I can make that change.
Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Beanstalk. This is Vic Taylor.
Yes, I agree. Good catch on that. Passing over, I'm just continuing to scroll down. That was my only change on the 155-56. Dr. Beanstalk's on 163. I'm moving down to page 165 in our board packet. Hold on, let me see. On R411-1203, where we have in the red underneath it, dentist, dental therapist, adding on to it, I think that we should also add dental therapist onto the line of the R4-11-1203. Dentist, dental therapist, and dental consultants. And then that clarification of the paragraph below it. Do you all agree with that?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Moving on for me, and please stop me if somebody has something in between. My next thing isn't until page 219. So if somebody has something in between that, let me know.
I'm sorry, this is Jessica. So 1203, are you talking about the title to include this dental therapist and dental consultant?
Correct.
Okay, just wanted to clarify. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Now where are you at?
To page 219. I'm doing it a bit of the hard way and I'm scrolling, so bear with me as I scroll to make sure I don't miss anything. Oh, yes, okay. Actually, I take that back. That's going to bring us to a different agenda item at 219. So if nobody has any further questions for the actual agenda item number 5, the 5-year rule review, or changes, then Hardy, I would make a motion that we approve the draft with the proposed amendments for the 5-year rule review for submission to the Governor's Regulatory Review Council.
Taylor, second.
Open in a second. Any discussion?
So I wasn't on the agenda for this meeting to bring the advertising verbiage. So can we do that next meeting?
Yeah, anytime. So this is Ryan. Anytime we're looking at changing our rule, so the 5-year rule review doesn't include advertising, but anytime there's a rule issue, we can do it. So the notice of proposed rulemaking, which is item 6, that's where we can propose rules, whether we repeal or whatever, however we're changing those things, we can always have a rule item back on anytime. So, and I know that it was kind of a quick turnaround, so sorry, thanks for bearing with us as we were trying to get that information, but we can move forward with what it is now, and not in this item, but the next item. If you have something to offer, we can listen to it, but I think we can wait till the next meeting or any other meeting in the future.
Thank you, Ryan. I'd like to wait to the next meeting. Also, it should be, the official term is dental anesthesiology.
Dental anesthesiology. That's on page 161. Yeah, number 8. Okay.
Perfect, thank you. And then I do make sure that my motion includes that specific term.
And then for a second.
Okay, motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor? Oh, sorry, Beth. Sorry.
Sorry, this is Jessica. I just wanted to clarify. So the 5-year rule review is a separate document, so to speak, from the notice of proposed rulemaking. What we have just gone through and those changes, such as, you know, changing general to dental anesthesiology, moving the dental therapy stuff to its own article, likely in Article 6, and then renumbering the articles, that would all be done in the notice of proposed rulemaking. The 5-year rule review is simply that table at the very beginning of this document, and then there is a report that corresponds to that table that essentially just elaborates on the information that's in that table. So I just wanted to clarify that the board would be looking at doing approving two different things. The first being to move forward with filing a 5-year rule review report that includes that table with the Governor's Regulatory Review Council, and then separately the changes that we discussed it making to the specific rules themselves, that would be part of the notice of proposed rulemaking.
Perfect. Thank you. I apologize for that confusion. It was on the agenda. I was confused on that. So then I would make my motion and amend my motion that we then reference specifically to that table, that we still approve the draft for the 5-year rule review for submission to the Governor's Regulatory Review, and then we will move forward with the rest of what we were just talking about.
Taylor seconds that.
Okay, so both of the amendments were changed to the motion and the second. Any further discussion? And thank you for the clarification, Jessica. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. So now agenda item number 6, notice of proposed rulemaking. We have already covered some of the initial parts of it, so we're going to keep going down. So again, I don't have any changes until page 219. So if you have anything that you want to see before that, please bring it up. And the only change I have on page 219 is I thought for consistency, where it has in red dental therapist, I think that should be moved to right after the dentist before dental hygiene, dental hygienist.
This is Jessica, duly noted.
Okay. My next one isn't until page 230. So if anybody has anything in between, again, please bring it up. On number 24, or excuse me, on page 230, number 4, we need to add in on that very top line where it says, except for a dental consultant license applicant, dental, we need to add in dental therapist.
So except for a dental therapist,
a dental
licensing applicant or a dental, okay.
You see where, yeah, except for a dental consultant license applicant, dental therapists and dental hygiene license applicants provide proof. So we need to add that in that very top line of number 4 after the word dental.
Before got it.
A dental hygiene, dental hygienist. And now I don't have anything until page 249. And on page 249, you even pointed that out. Does this need to be changed? Western Regional Examining Board, Reb. Yes, I think that we need to strike Western Regional Examining Board, Reb. And I think that an appropriate word, and again, I am open to suggestions, I thought we could put in licensing. So it would read, committee members who are licensed dentists or dental hygienists. Oh, and we also need to add on dental therapists into that wording. Committee members who are licensed dentists, dental therapists, or dental hygienists may serve as licensing examiners or board consultants.
It works.
Okay. Okay. And that same thing changing on page 250 as well, just like you pointed out.
Okay.
And 252 may be the same thing. What do I have for that? Oh, and then 252, that falls under the same thing, that it's under Article 7 for dental assistance. So once you fix that and give them their article, which would follow right after the dentist article, and move all the subsequent articles down, that would be fixed when we had already spoken about that.
Noted.
Okay. All right, does anybody have anything else? That was everything that I had.
No, it looks good.
Okay, so then, Hardy, I would make a motion that we approve the draft notice of proposed rulemaking for submission to the Governor's Regulatory Review Council with the amendments that were stated.
Taylor, second.
Motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Agenda item number 8.
This is Dr. Taylor.
Yes, sorry.
With that, Dr. Beanstack, do you want to direct staff to talk about the advertising next time we go into a board meeting?
I'd like it on the next agenda for June 5th.
Okay, thank you.
Please, thank you.
Thank you.
This is Jessica, just to clarify, so if there's going to be more changes to the advertising section of the rules, do you want to hold off on filing the notice of proposed until the board decides whether or not there are additional changes based on the advertising discussion at your next meeting?
I would like that, but is there a
change? I agree. if we're looking at changing it. The other question would be, is it something that we're allowed to talk about right now since we have this open and we're looking at these changes? Is our agenda agendaized to speak about that, Ryan?
Let me look. I believe so. Let me just...
So I'll leave it up to you, Dr. Beanstalk, and the other board members. I know
that I was in the process of rewriting it, and then I was going to submit something to you guys. And so that's why I was asking for more time to be able to do that, to submit to you for the June 5th meeting.
Perfect. No problem. So with that being said, we just approved all of that we talked about. So just as Jessica said, let's hold off on sending it to the governor's office until we get more Dr. Beanstalk's recommendation and have that discussion.
The only requirement is the five-year rule review has to be to them by April 30th. The notice of proposed rulemaking is on your time.
Okay, and I think we already approved for that to be sent. So, okay, so agenda item number 8, Arizona State Board of Dental Examiners Fund Balance. Board to review, discuss, and take possible action regarding the agency's fund balance as it relates to the financial pressures incurred as a result of COVID-19 and seek to offer another renewal fee holiday fee beyond December 31st, 2020. So Ryan, would you like to talk on any of this before we move forward?
And I'll cautiously speak on this because some of the information that I have is confidential, I can speak on it, but not how I received some of the information. So if you guys look at page 318, this is your at a glance, a summary of your total expenditures and revenues, and what you're allocated to spend in a year for the operating budget. If you look in there's a blue line at the bottom that talks about cumulative appropriation, and right above that, it says remaining ending allotment. So I'll tell you that we have a contract with the General Accounting Office with the state of Arizona. And since we've lost key personnel within GAO, General Accounting Office, we have not had a whole lot of confidence in any information that we've received from them. This report that you're looking at, we do. We've looked at it, Christina mostly, have looked at it with great intensity. We've actually run it by an expert that we used to work with closely to double check to make certain that this is an okay report to show you. So if you look, it shows that we have a $43,000 remaining allotment, and that's in that right above the blue line. At the very, if you look at the far right, it shows the $43,000 figure. There's still stuff that will come out between now and June 30th that will probably wipe not all of that out, but a good chunk of it. At the very bottom of the document, it says ending fund balance. So it's super important to know that a budget and balance are two different things, and they get interchanged, and people use them as synonymous terms. They're totally different. So the balance is not how much we can spend. We have an appropriation amount that we can spend, even though we're 100% funded agency. We share 10% of all revenue with the state. So there was a Supreme Court ruling several years ago that says all money that comes into any state agency, regardless of how it comes in, becomes state money, which will help some of you understand why and how the governor's office often or legislation sweeps money from fund balances. Our fund balance is at the beginning of the year on the far left at the very bottom under July. It shows it at $5.1 million. At the far right, after the operating and everything else, it drops to 4.2. We share this with OSPB, JLBC, and the governor's office and legislature. Based on all, we had a rainy day fund, as you know, during the governor's state of the state, talked about $1 billion rainy day fund. The rainy day came, and it's called COVID-19. Not only has it essentially has or will wipe out the $1 billion rainy day fund, it will likely go another $1 billion that they'll have to expend to help small businesses and every other financial issues within the state of Arizona. So they're looking at balances. Any agency that has a balance of over $2 million, they're looking at. Ours is one of those two, or one of those agencies, excuse me, because we're at 4.2. I don't know what their plans are on whether or not they're going to sweep anything above $2 million. I don't know if they're going to sweep even below. Even if you have over $2 million, are they going to sweep to leave you with an operating budget of 1.2, because that's what our appropriation fund is? We don't know. And they're still kind of left out. I've had conversations with several folks of whichever name, not by name, but they're looking at kind of, and I'm not even certain who the person is. I kind of have an idea who it might be that's trying to protect the dental board fund to some degree. And if anything comes out, that the money that comes out, if it's swept, then gets distributed or disseminated to the dental profession, dentists, hygienists, and the 12 dental denturists that we have. I don't know what the refund would look like. I've done math on this. I spent an entire day going over this whole refund, is what they're calling it. It's money that they're basically kind of similar to the stimulus package on the federal level. It will never amount to that much money because I think those are $1,200 amounts. If we did $1,200, it would cost us millions of dollars, of which we don't have. So if there's a refund that's paid out similar to the stimulus on a federal level, it would be somewhere around, this is going to be super nominal, so don't lose it when you hear it. It's around $250 to $350 if they sweep the money. That's what, and actually, if they're going to take the money, that's what I would like them to do. I would rather they give it to everybody that's paid into it versus using it for some general fund that has no oversight, and I'm speaking to probably most of you now because most of you have paid into this. So that's what I would like to see happen if they do that. So when you look at, and I think that on April 10th when we had Sean Murphy and John McDonald here and they were making the proposition to do the fee holiday again for another renewal cycle. We have passed on that information that we didn't have it properly agendized to vote on it in that specific regard. This is your opportunity to do that again and extend the holiday again. This would be you guys making the decision to do the fee holiday. The last time it was legislation that did it through, their own, they did it on their own accord without your input or very little input. You have the option now to go ahead and vote that way. The way it sounded like you were going to go on April 10th, which is to offer this fee holiday or the renewal fee holiday. If you do that, my understanding is that you should be cautious that you include a caveat in there that fund balance get swept to a level that you had uncertainty of whether or not we would remain solvent, that you could come back to review that motion and maybe charge for renewal. It doesn't have to be to the extent that it is. So you could go to zero. You could go anywhere between whatever amounts that you have listed in rule. It could be zero. And I'm not discouraging you from doing what you thought you wanted to do April 10th. You should just carry the vote with a caveat that says that you want to readdress this sometime between now and January 1st if it's deemed necessary that you readdress it based on how much may come out of your fund balance. I hope I've explained it. Christina, I'll let you chime in if you could.
I think you covered all of the main points. Our main concern was just trying to seek an appropriation this fiscal year for $1.5 million. That was to help with our licensing department and our compliance department since licensing has increased 30% since 2009. So that was our main focus, but now with COVID, it seems like things have changed.
President Hardy, this is Sean Murphy with the Arizona Dental Association. Could I please make comment?
Yes.
Thank you. So, per what Ryan said, and again, you know, I think we were all under the assumption when this was last discussed that the fund would be at $5 million, and now if it's closer to $4.2 million, we are definitely in support of the fee holiday. If the caveat needs to be included, we understand the reasoning for that. So I think right now, as most everyone on this call realizes, you know, we have practices that are 98% lost on revenue that they currently had. And any financial relief that this board can offer, even if it has less than the $5 million, but still in excess of $4 million in the coffers, would be much appreciated. We, of course, do not want to bankrupt Bodex. Not that it could be bankrupted, but you get what I mean, make it insolvent. So the caveat would make sense to us. Hopefully that'd be a caveat we never have to exercise, but I think that would be a great message to all licensees that Bodex understands their financial situation and will continue a fee holiday for the foreseeable future. Thank you.
Thank you.
So do we make a motion?
Yes, Hardy, I would make a motion that we continue with the fee holiday for the next triennial session, which would be years 2022 through 2024, with the caveat that if our board fund is swept or taken, that we will readdress between now and 1-1 of 2022 for possible changes based on the fund balance.
Taylor, second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? And Ryan, do you feel that that caveat is acceptable?
Yeah, I think it covers it, but I just wanted to clarify. You said 22 to 24. This would begin January 21.
Yeah. It's 21.
Oh, sorry, you guys. I'm putting us in the year 2021. I apologize about that. And I also said that it would go start at January. We would reevaluate it, readdress it 1-1 of 2022. So I amend my motion to be the fee holiday is effective for 2021 through 2023, and that we readdress it between now and 1-1 of 2021.
Taylor, second.
Any further discussion?
Yeah, this is McLean. Do we have to have any wording in that caveat right now?
No, I think we
might come back to address.
No, and actually, because this doesn't take effect on January 21st, it's really just to memorialize that you are aware that you may be losing your balance, which would then make it more challenging to support something like this. So it's just to memorialize it. You can always come and look at your these types of motions before they take effect, for sure.
And this is Morrow. I also think it's very, very appropriate timing to be able to talk about the needs of our dental communities and what happened through COVID-19 and all the other stuff. I think this is a good time to show that we're willing to and understand the needs of the dental communities during this time.
And if I could, and I'm stealing Deb Kappas's thunder, she actually wrote a question in the chat that I think probably should be addressed. Prior, the holiday before was, it only affected the people that were renewing before January 1st, that were licensed before January 1st of 2018 because they're renewing a license they already had. Do you want to do that in this, that they have to be licensed before January 1st of 21?
It would be for only new applicants, or for only renewal applicants.
Current license holders.
Yes, correct. I would amend my motion to then say that's for only those licensed for renewal.
21.
That's right.
Taylor, second.
So, motion and a second. Fee holiday, for again, with the caveat, and it would not be for new licensees. This is only for people who are licensed before 2021. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Agenda item number 9, summary of current events. Ryan, is there anything that you need to address or anybody else?
I'm good. Thank you.
Thank you. Agenda item number 10.
I got one thing on that, I guess, is what I'm trying to. Do you still need help wording the thing for the governor then, Ryan, later on?
Probably. I already started during this meeting, and I'll work with Heather to try to get something out, and then.
You have my phone number. Connect with me at any time.
I'm happy to help too. This is Beanstalk.
Okay, thanks.
And then agenda item number 10, discussion and possible action items for future meetings and agendas. Other than we already have the one for Dr. Beanstalk with the advertising, any other?
I have something. Now that have we fully changed the duties of the dental assistant to talk about final impressions, right?
Oh my goodness. I don't remember.
I'm pretty sure that was part of the rules that we changed to be final impressions for digital impressions for dental assistants. That we talked about that one time ago. But we wanted to wait to finish it with this roll-up packet.
I'll have to go back and look. I know that the last time they talked about it, I'm not sure that you attended the meeting, and I don't recall, to be honest with you.
Okay. So can we double-check if it needs to be put on there? Let's make sure we put that on there.
Yes.
For the next time. And if it is already on there, do we want to discuss doctors taking final impressions or associations taking final impressions to that are not licensed to take final impressions? I'm trying to get legal on that one.
So you want to know if we can have dental assistants take digital impressions in their
mouth? If we've already passed the dental assistants can take final impressions digitally, then we've got to make sure that all entities doing dentistry of any kind in the state of Arizona are obeying the laws, and if they are not, we need to address that. I'm looking at teledentistry and orthodontics moving doctors there.
I agree. So if they are allowed to do it, you want it to be under the direct supervision?
Under direct supervision.
So, Dr. Morrow, are you asking that to be another future agenda item?
If we haven't already finished the dental assisting thing, I want the dental assisting thing first. If we finish the dental assisting thing, then if we can put that on the next agenda item to evaluate teledentistry dealing with final impressions where doctors are not in supervising dentistry.
Or how about teledentistry with the current rule package moving forward?
That's fine.
This is Dr. Taylor. It wasn't discussed in that previous meeting.
We even had Danby, I think we're getting off topic, but
what would be best is have staff look at it, and however it needs to be put on a future agenda, it can be put on that way.
I love it. That's kind of what I was looking for.
Thank you.
Any other future agenda items? We have agenda item number 11, next board meeting date, Friday, June 5th. And agenda item number 12.
Any Taylor makes a motion and we adjourn this meeting.
Hardy seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Any